Hey, this is Chuck Dixon, and you're listening to Signal of Doom.
Well, you know, for me, the action is the juice. I'm in.
Hello and welcome to Signal of Doom, episode 101. I'm Dave. I'm here with the main man, Stu. Stu, how are you?
Good, Dave. It's been a long week for us, though.
It's been a long week, man. But I'm in a, guess what? I'm in a good mood.
And that's a rare happy moment for this
episode. I am very happy. And I also want to say thank you to all the listeners. When we recorded episode 100, although I was very happy that we'd reached 100, I was in intense pain and my worldview was a little bleak.
Bleaker than normal. Not just bleak. Slightly bleaker than normal.
So I do want to say a sincere thank you to all listeners because you are a huge part of what makes a Signal great.
Absolutely.
And this week, we got voted in the top 25 comic book podcasts by Feedspot, who featured us on their page, and they tagged me, and I almost couldn't believe it. So thank you very much to Feedspot for ranking us there with some big boys, Stu, iFanboy and others.
Well, yeah, and to mention, we've got Batman Universe made the list as well.
Who
had a bit of collaborative work with. So.
Oh, definitely. We've got like heavy ties and friendships with a lot of the Batman Universe people, Dusty, Jimmy Terza, Stella, like a long list. And so I was very excited they made the list, and Dustin was very good. He put out straight away and he mentioned us saying, you know, congratulations. So congratulations to Batman Universe. Dusty does a fantastic job.
Yeah, it's fantastic to see both of us made that list.
Exactly. Right. Two of the greatest comic book podcasts ever.
Well, two of the top 25.
Exactly. And we were comfortably in the middle.
It wasn't a ranked list. It was just a conglomerate group of the 25.
Well, I was very, very happy. And so our listeners are a huge part of that, so thank you very much. Now, Stu, turning to... I should ask you, Stu, have you had any big news this week? Anything big going on over there in Stu World?
Big news? No, man.
Big news?
I spent up big on comic books this week.
Spent up big on comic books?
Yeah.
Stu outlaid the cash.
Yeah, it wasn't.
Did you just walk
it wasn't
into,
a smart choice.
Did you just walk into King's and just slap the cash down on the counter and say, Jim... Yeah. Take me for a ride.
I did pick up quite a few.
My big news is puppy school's a thing, and I've been there, and meanwhile, I'm in the throne again, Stu, where Stu normally sits in kind of the lounge chair. With my bad back, I've now taken up throne position. I'm really just missing a crown. I've got feet up.
I mean, he has modified
cushion.
It heavily, yep. So it's about 2 foot away from the giant TV, and he's got his feet up,
yep.
Laid back.
I'm loving it.
It's the most pathetic-looking Dave you've ever seen.
No wonder I'm in such a good mood. You know, and last night I had one of my mates over. We played the Munchkin game. Stu, remember you played Marvel Munchkin on the show?
I remember that, yeah.
When I was in Hawaii, Stu made some very odd choices. But, like, I let it go because I was in Hawaii. It was interesting, but it's a fun game to play. We had the Apocalypse and Cthulhu expansion packs in the normal Munchkin. So we had a lot going on. That was actually a lot of fun. Unfortunately, I was a little tired. I almost fell asleep in the middle of my round. I just closed my eyes for a little bit, and they were like, Dave, are you asleep? I was like, no, not quite. it was almost midnight.
That doesn't sum up pathetic. I don't know what does.
It was almost midnight. It was almost midnight on a Saturday. And, you know, that's...
And your party animal life couldn't quite keep up with that.
I had one cider as well.
Oh,
I was just a little sleepy.
Hitting the drinks. I mean, you and I had a few Friday nights.
Yes, a few G&Ts.
You were a bit tipsy going home that day.
Tipsy? I was like, wow, it's like I'm swimming. That was one of the comments I made.
You actually did say that at one point, yeah.
I always say that when I get drunk. And then I played tennis the next morning. And I swear to God, I was sweating G&T. Like, I felt so fucking, like, not really badly hungover, but just like when you start doing the physical activity at about 9 o'clock after, you know, a fairly big night for me, I really wasn't, like, all there. The couple of times a shot would come across about 2 feet from me, and I was like, no, I'm not moving for that. That's not close enough. I watched a couple of winners just go by, and I was like, eh, well, you know, I mean, it's a game. What does it really matter?
I feel like that's your attitude towards life in general, though, not just tennis. Like, that's just a bleak outlook on life in general. It's bleeding into your tennis game.
Oh, well, all I can say to you is I'm in a really good mood today. So I think that...
I don't know what happened.
That this bodes is... well. Oh, well, I had a nice sleep, you know, nice rest. I'm just loving this throne as well. Like, I really do feel like... I always like to be Dave Letterman over there on the desk. But sometimes it's nice to kind of feel like a guest on my own show. And Stu, you'll find over there you do a lot more of the heavy lifting. Because they're back here. I wouldn't be surprised if Stu starts talking and then we cut back to Dave and you might hear a little snore. because I'm just that relaxed.
I'm honestly surprised you haven't fallen asleep during a podcast to date. It's,
I've got close.
You've come very close on a number of occasions.
Now, turning to news, Stu, Lego Movie 2, or Part 2, whatever they're calling it, disappoints at the box office. Gee, do you feel that... Apparently the reviews are quite good. Do you feel that the appetite for Lego movies after Lego Movie 1, like Batman Lego, very good movie, it was flatter, and Lego Ninjago didn't make waves? Is it just part of... Is there fatigue, or is the concept just played out to, like, the general audience? What's the reason for this?
I don't know. I feel like Lego Movie was almost a one-hit wonder for the studio. They're making good movies, so it's not the quality of the movies. I haven't heard or seen Ninjago.
I haven't seen Ninjago, but I've definitely seen Lego Batman, which was excellent.
But Lego Movie was fine. That was a good quality movie.
I loved
Lego
it.
Batman was a good quality movie. I've heard the same of Lego Movie 2.
Maybe just the appetite isn't there amongst the general audience. Like the
I don't know. I also
kids.
Feel like they just didn't market it.
Yeah. Yeah.
And they had that weird release schedule with Lego Movie Batman, which really hurt its box office take.
Oh, well, they did the staggered release internationally.
The staggered, but it was staggered not over, like, a couple of weeks.
That was crazy.
Staggered over a couple of months.
That was crazy. I was surprised that Lego Batman, considering how good it was and that Batman was so good in the Lego movie, didn't... I know it made money, but it wasn't as big a hit as the original. I thought Lego Batman could have been bigger than Lego movie.
Yeah, but, like, I don't feel it's a quality issue. I feel it's a marketing and... studio issue that they're just not.
I'd agree.
Selling this film.
I also think though that they may rethink their Lego franchise and go back to sort of the direct to DVD, which is what they had before VOD. You know, there's millions of Lego Superman and sort of like DC movies that just go direct to streaming services, direct to DVD. Like that's where they went before Lego Movie.
Yeah, they did. They had a successful TV show.
I think they're going to go back to that. I really do. I think that's going to be the direction it goes back to.
See, I'd like to see them take on different genres and have solo standout movies like the Lego Movie Batman, but have a Lego Lord of the Rings kind of movie or a Lego...
And they've done these very Star successfully
Wars
in games.
And like Lego Star Wars has been a massive success game-wise.
Yeah, as has Lego Marvel Superheroes. And all the Lego... I love the Lego games. They're very repetitive, but they're fun.
Yeah, so I mean, I'd like to see them do more of that than focus on the Lego as a general...
Yeah, gotcha. I see.
Like the Lego movie.
You want the more specific.
Like Lego Batman, I thought really could have worked. And if they did more of those.
Yeah.
So standalone single movies on a different concept, showing off the fact that Lego has the rights to a billion different properties.
Lego Star Wars movie would be good.
Lego Star Wars movie would be amazing.
Yeah.
And imagine how much Lego they would sell on the back of Star Wars.
Yeah, no, you're right.
Like, that's what I'd be doing.
That's
I wouldn't be focusing on... Because the Lego movie, great movie, very general. And it was selling more the idea of buy a set of bricks, build whatever you want.
The old style Lego that I grew up with.
The old style Lego, yeah, that you and I grew up with as kids.
Yeah.
Whereas
it's really
Lego,
changed
Lego
now.
Batman was all about Batman merch.
Also, Lego, like, I'm so far out of it, dude. Like, I play with Lego a lot in, like, early to mid-80s, and it was really, like, space Lego was a big thing.
Yeah, the Spaceman, I had hundreds of them.
Yeah, they were great. And but then I flash forward to, like, the 2000s, and it's, like, fucking huge ships, and I'm like, what the fuck is happening to Lego? Like,
I feel like Lego's got a lot more specific.
Successfully, too. I watched a documentary on them not that long ago about the changes they made and the challenges they had. And
yeah.
They had a lot of challenges. Like, they can fought back from the brink of bankruptcy, you know?
Yeah.
Interesting. A very interesting company. Yeah, no, I hope there's more, but I think they need to retool and they also need to market it better. Because I didn't feel the marketing... If we weren't doing this show and I wasn't more over just trailers in general, Lego Movie 2 would have almost have passed me completely.
Oh, absolutely. Like, I think I might have seen one TV spot, maybe.
That's weird, isn't it?
Yeah.
That tells me the studio is more risk-averse and spending less on marketing, because they're thinking it's
well,
like,
I also feel like they're marketing purely towards children, so they're marketing during the kids' TV shows. And,
okay.
So it's not something that we would come across.
Sure.
But the Lego,
but Lego Movie 1 did.
Lego Movie 1 did, and they actually made that film for a mixed audience.
Yeah, I actually love Lego Movie 1.
And it was
Movie
successful 1. Because it was a mix of... Take the kids to see it, but you'll also enjoy it.
Yeah, I got to be honest. I'm a hypocrite here. I'm not going to go see Lego Movie 2 in cinemas. I can't be bothered, but I'll watch it in a heartbeat when it comes out on streaming, like for sure. I haven't. Have you seen Ralph Breaks the Internet?
No, I still haven't seen
it. I have a copy. I'm going to watch it maybe tonight.
Okay.
Yeah, no, I'm really looking forward to
it. I mean, I have heard, like, my friends have seen Lego Movie 2, and they basically said if you like the first one,
okay,
you're going to love this one. It's more dumb, catchy songs.
Yeah.
It's more, like, slapstick comedy from Chris Pratt.
And surely some neat cameos, like the original had, too, from different characters.
Yeah.
I love that council scene where it was, like, you know, the guys from Harry Potter and Gandalf and et cetera. It's like,
well, Lego Harry Potter would be amazing.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Like I feel like that there's a lot of... I mean, they've explored it in the... Have you played many of the games? That's what I was going to say. Have you played many LEGO games? The computer games?
I played one or two, but I was getting out of games when LEGO were coming into games.
Look, I have played...
The first LEGO Star Wars I played.
It's good, isn't it? Like,
it was great. It was a fun game.
Like, I've got most of them either as downloads, and I own quite a few, especially the LEGO Marvel games. They're repetitive, and they're better when you play with someone else, but they're a lot of fun. You know?
But, I mean, they're made for kids, so that's exactly what you want.
If you had, if I had a kid, we'd be playing it in a heartbeat, and it would be how I would kind of brainwash him or her into comic books. Like, seriously. That
it's
would
nice
be
to know that you've already planned how to brainwash children.
Oh, this is the thing of every parent. Like, seriously, the other day I was chatting to Ray, who has a young child. I was talking about his football team. He's a huge, American listeners, but like rugby league, Balmain, yeah?
Tiger supporter.
He's a huge Tiger supporter. And he was chatting about that, and I said, mate, if you can't, like, it's your right as a parent to brainwash him to be a Tiger supporter. He's like 100%. I'm like, yeah, that's the point. Like, you grow them up. And if they want to rebel and follow someone else, fine. But, like,
if they want to rebel, they'll follow Manly.
Someone, yeah.
That's kind of the absolute middle finger to Tiger supporters.
Yeah. But, like, that's your right as a parent to try to do that. Every parent knows that. Now, a movie that I'm really interested in, Alita Battle Angel, is getting surprise, really quite rave reviews from some quarters, but there's big doubts about its US domestic potential box office wise. Now, I spoke to a couple of people last night who've seen it, loved it. I've actually heard quite a number of people who love this movie. I mean, Stu, is it an in-cinema experience for you, Alita Battle Angel?
Probably not.
Okay.
It's got a lot of things going for it.
Mm.
But for me, movies that are that heavily CGI...
It is heavy, yeah.
Huge. Haven't been great in the past.
I've heard reviews like this is the most visually astounding thing they've seen.
No doubt. Like, visuals are going to be amazing.
James Cameron behind the whole thing as well, you know?
Yeah, exactly. But they're comparing it to the kind of experience you would have watching, like, an Avatar.
Okay.
Where it visually stunning the whole way.
Dude, I might actually see this in cinema because I actually am pretty interested in it. Like... yeah, I don't know. Like, it's just... I'm glad to hear that, because the original reports were like, this is going to be the worst thing ever, huge bomb for the studio. And then it started getting reviews like, this is actually pretty good and is awesome. Like, check it out in cinemas. Like, so I'm wondering what the end box office take will be on it. I think they'll be lucky to make their money back, because this would have cost an absolute fortune, surely.
Oh, the CGI budget would be hundreds of millions.
Yeah, so it might be a break-even for this studio, and there's huge doubts of it at the US box office, so we will look at the numbers next week, because what happened was last night, I went on Box Office Mojo, and they were fucking down for repairs. I was like, seriously, I mean, I was like, what's away from the bulldozer you used to get in the 90s when you'd go to a website and construction? And it was like, yeah, do you remember that? Like,
no, yeah, I don't remember the bulldozer.
Back in the early days of the internet, you'd go onto a website that wasn't working and it would have a bulldozer and say website undergoing construction. And I'm like clicking on Box Office Mojo. Maybe it's up today, Stu, but last night I'm clicking on it. It's going, we're undergoing fucking, you know, training issues or something. I was like, seriously? Like, it felt like, I thought I was back. I checked the calendar. Am I back in 1995?
Like, it's up and running. I don't know what you mean.
Okay, check out Alita Battle Angel then. Look, this is live on the Signal of Doom. Stu's getting involved.
I mean, it's not huge numbers.
Okay, what have you got?
So domestic, it's just over 16 million.
Okay,
foreign 35 million.
Okay, and this is the first week though. So I mean, they're tiny numbers. That'd be Friday, Saturday numbers for the States, yeah.
Well, so they haven't had a full weekend yet. Saturday in the States right now.
Yeah, so that would maybe just be the Friday numbers.
Yeah.
Okay, well, anyway, by next week we'll at least look at these numbers, because I am interested in seeing this movie. No, I don't think everyone thinks it's going to lose a ton. I think it's a question of how much it will lose at the box office rather than how much it will kind of make. I think it's going to be a loss leader, unfortunately. But it is interesting that it's getting such good reviews.
Yeah, I don't know. It feels a bit like Ready Player One.
Sure.
Where it's got a lot of potential to be amazing. But,
yeah. But that at least had Spielberg, like, pushing it, like, fucking hardcore, if you remember.
Yeah.
I don't know. Like, it's interesting. I also heard that James Cameron was saying that all the Avatar movies that he's making are designed to be standalones with the greatest story through them all. So that's what he said anyway. Like, I'm interested to see what these Avatar movies are like.
See, I'm so cold on Avatar. I'm not.
I'm pretty cold, but, like, James Cameron always impresses me. He very rarely hasn't in his whole career. So I am interested. Like, I'm the guy.
I would agree, but the exception for me is Avatar. Like, that's the only problem I'm having. Like, James Cameron's blip on his resume is Avatar for me.
Okay. But it is the highest movie of all time. Like, so commercially it wasn't a blip.
Highest, grossing movie of all time, but it's nowhere near his best. Like, it's probably...
No, it's not his best.
One of, if not his worst movie of all time.
I'd agree with that. I mean, visually stunning, but, yeah, I mean, yeah, story... I mean, I put so many James Cameron movies ahead of it.
Like. And, I mean, unless he can, again, just recreate and just obliterate what we currently think of as technology in movies and turn this into a whole new experience.
Well, he's behind this Alita Battle Angel.
Five times over.
Alita Battle Angel, he's getting the same sort of stuff. People saying it's the most visually stunning thing they've seen. And it's his production studio and everything else that's made it. I don't know. It's just interesting.
Yeah, but like he changed the game with Avatar and that's how it made that kind of money.
For sure.
Unless he can do that five times over, I think this franchise is going to get very old and very tired very quickly.
I'd say you're probably right, Stuart. Even the James Cameron supporter that I am, I think you've probably hit the nail on the head. Now, we've got some big news coming out from Hulu that they've got a number of animated Marvel shows coming out. Now, Marvel fans have long wanted Kevin Smith to take on the foul-mouthed Howard the Duck character. And these dreams are finally coming true. Along with Aqua Teen Hunger Force co-creator Dave Willis, Smith is writing and producing an adult-orientated Howard the Duck animated series for Marvel on Hulu, and is ecstatic to finally have this chance. This is something that Kevin Smith's been teasing on his podcast for months.
Yeah.
So he's doing this. Other animated Marvel shows coming to Hulu. There's four in total. Obviously, there's Howard the Duck with Kevin Smith. Then there's a MODOK series created by Patton Oswalt and Jordan Blum, centered around the egomaniacal villain as he struggles to keep control of his evil organization and demanding family. And you were saying, Stuart, that Patton Oswalt is voicing it, all right?
Early reports say that Patton Oswalt will voice the character. Okay. So that sounds amazing.
Then we've got Hitmonkey, which I know from Deadpool. I don't know if it was created in Deadpool. You know, remember Daniel Waisman? I don't know if it was created in
Deadpool, but he just got a good... He's been around in Marvel.
Yeah. Being written and executive produced by Josh Gordon and Will Speck. And then there's a Tigra and Dazzler show on the way from Erica Rivenoja and Chelsea Handler. Chelsea Handler's, am I right in saying, sort of comedian slash talk show host?
Yeah, it's exactly who she is.
Oh, okay. Wow. So they're going outside the field there. Now, Tigra and Dazzler, that is such a throwback that I'm sort of like, cool. That's actually a pretty neat selection of shows coming out on Hulu.
It is, because they're kind of the, you don't expect them to be there. Because when they're going through that list, you're like, okay, so they're going for the clear kind of, not your typical hero.
All offbeat. They're all
like offbeat. Howard the Duck is a heavy vehicle for satire.
I must say, I'm looking forward to Howard the Duck with Kevin Smith behind it.
I actually think that'll work really well.
Yeah.
And I think that could be a really high concept show.
Could be very funny.
Like, really clever.
Yeah.
But MODOK's just a straight up villain. But
I've
he's
got my
so
mug.
Odd. He's
Stuart,
so
got my MODOK mug. I love him. Michelle bans it. I'm not allowed to even show her. She hates him that much.
I love it.
MODOK hasn't been in the movies yet, has he? It was Arnim Zola, wasn't it? I always get too confused.
I mean, yeah, MODOK's never been in an MCU movie.
Gee, he's
got
to be
in animated movies before.
Oh, yeah, he's been in the Avengers cartoons and stuff, for sure. Yeah. He's a crazy little bastard. What is it, mechanized organism designed only for killing, is that right?
Yeah, that's exactly it.
Yeah. No, I like MODOK. You can definitely see him being played for comedy. I mean, they did a comic on him not too long ago, Lex Cott or whatever his name is, that was pretty comedic.
Yeah.
Was pretty good, actually. I like.
But, I mean, it's a giant head with, like, tiny little mechanized arms and legs coming out of his head. Like, the arms coming out of, like, his temples.
Yeah.
And like, it's a ridiculous concept for a villain, and I think that's...
And he's
just Patton Oswalt, though.
So evil, though, as well, which is what I love about MODOK.
Oh, yeah, his plans are, like, world domination villainy.
He's just crazy.
I love it.
Tigra and Dazzler as well, Stu. Like, I mean, that is a two very... Like, Dazzler, you know, like a sort of 70s, 80s throwback. And Tigra, you don't see much of her at all.
You don't see a lot from either of these two.
No. I mean, they turn up...
I mean, Dazzler's ability is to turn sound into light.
Yeah.
That is her mutant ability.
And her other thing, she was a disco queen and singer and
stuff. She was a singer, yeah.
Yeah.
Because she could make her own light show from the sound.
I read a...
I mean, it's not a great power set.
Well, the funny thing was, apparently, I've been reading this History of Comics, which I'll mention later in the show, but they were... when they were trying to launch Dazzler. They did it. It was the first book to go direct market only. Okay, and they sold, like, a lot of copies. It was a test case by Jim Shooter. Anyway, they'd spent about 2 years developing her and trying to get her into movies, and by the time they got her out, the disco craze had really cooled.
Yeah.
Like, it's... Because, you know, disco blew up really big, and it crashed almost instantly. Like, when it crashed, it was quite sudden.
And Marvel's done this before. Like, they created a bunch of characters during the 70s kung fu phase.
Sure. Yes.
Like, Shang-Chi came out and then, and
yeah, Iron Fist. Yeah, of course. Yeah.
Iron Fist was out, but he became a lot bigger.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden that thing crashed, and suddenly you didn't see Shang-Chi for a decade.
Yeah,
exactly. And Dazzler was a response to...
I still don't like Shang-Chi. Like, I know people will shoot me down on the internet. I know it's a beloved thing, but, like, to me, it's just Bruce Lee inside the Marvel Universe, but they never give him anything to do.
Well, it is. It's Bruce Lee in the Marvel Universe.
And I love Bruce Lee.
But that's nothing to hate. Like, that's nonsense.
I love Bruce Lee, but I'm just saying they never give Shang-Chi anything good. Like, I've never seen him in anything good. Like, I've actually barely seen him. Like, he's undercover brother most of the time.
Oh, okay. I think that's more to do with what you've read, though.
I've read a lot of Avengers and, like, outside of, like, in modern comics, I'm talking, like, the last 20 years, how much Shang-Chi have you seen?
He tends to pop up in the smaller Avengers, like, offshoots.
Okay. Well, maybe I haven't seen it. I saw him in one episode of Hickman's Avengers. He showed up. Look, I like him. I love Bruce Lee. I just am always like, I don't know, where is this guy? Is he even still around?
Yeah.
But
he's always been on the outskirts. There's no doubt there.
Now, also, interestingly, Stu, much like Netflix's Defenders miniseries, these four animated shows will culminate in a team-up event called The Offenders, which will feature characters from the previous series. This all sounds pretty cool to me, Stu. I'm actually looking forward to this and coming out on Hulu. So,
yeah, there's also a rumour at this stage, but Deadpool is going to be included in that.
Oh, please, God.
Offenders... team up.
Please, Jesus, give me that Deadpool animated show that we almost got before.
And they're kind of looking at it similar to a Punisher character in the Netflix shows. Please. In that they'll have their main four, which they'll have a first season or two.
Yeah.
They'll hit this big team up and all of a sudden you're going to get this.
Yeah.
Deadpool shows up and then we get a spin off into his.
I can't believe they haven't got a Deadpool
because
animated
this
show.
This feels like the perfect vehicle for a Deadpool, doesn't it?
Well, shoot. Considering how popular Deadpool's been now for, like, 10-plus years, like, the fact they haven't put a Deadpool animated show out yet is amazing to me.
I mean, they tried hard for a while there.
With, what's his name? What's the guy's name again? I always forget his name. The guy from... He's the fucking singer as well. Childish Gambino.
Yeah, Gambino.
What's his name?
Glover.
What is it?
Glover?
Donald Glover, yeah?
Donald Glover.
Okay, Donald Glover. Yeah, Donald Glover, like, got very close. But I'm just saying, like, okay, that fell apart.
Got very close. Like, scripts were leaked and everything.
Yeah.
So, I feel like we're getting closer again. This is another...
Well...
If these things work, and we don't know that they will yet, but...
Oh, yeah, but I'm going to give it a go.
If,
I mean,
like,
I'm sure.
3 out of 4 of these things work.
Yeah.
There's a pretty good shot that's going to happen. Then they'll start looking into spinning off the other kind of outside characters.
Sure.
That you can play for comedy, but you can...
Yeah, definitely.
You know, run into this...
And mess. A lot of these animated shows Marvel have done, I've really enjoyed. Like, their Ultimate Spider-Man, which ran for 5 or 6 seasons, I've got the full box set. It's very enjoyable, and that had, you know, your Luke Cages, your Iron Fist, had a lot of characters coming in, White Tiger, etc., that were really interesting. I'm also pleased, because Kevin Smith has been teasing something... Listen to his podcast semi-regularly for a number of months, and I was always like, I hope this is something that's actually I'm interested in. I hope this isn't, like, something very lame that he's teasing. But, like, a lot of the stuff he does, it's reasonably high profile. You're like, okay, he's directing Flash, directing Supergirl, this and that. This has got to be something good. I'm glad this is something where I'm actually like, oh, sweet, this is decent. This is something I'll definitely watch.
And the other thing that came out of Hulu this week is that they're looking to pick up some of these Marvel Netflix shows.
Great news. Daredevil, Jessica Jones, etc.?
Well, they've only listed Luke Cage and Daredevil.
Because they're officially
canceled. Because those are the only two that are cancelled and that they actually want. Sure. Iron Fist, no one's talking about.
No one wants Iron Fist
at all. At the moment, Punisher and Jessica Jones have not been cancelled.
Yeah, they're officially. Not officially being cancelled yet.
It's a matter of time before we get the notification that Punisher's not been renewed.
That's good that Hulu VP actually came out and at least made that comment. Like, it's just, to, you know, just in general that he's making a comment that, yeah, it's something we'd be interested in looking at, you know, like, it's news that it's not completely dead. Because there's a lot of fans out there who did really enjoy Daredevil and stuff, you know, like.
Yeah, absolutely.
There's a fan base. Now, Stu, the title of the new Terminator movie is Terminator Dark Fate. This is the new movie coming out with James Cameron.
See, that really pisses me off.
Wow. Really?
Why? Why would you put fate in the title of a movie based on time travel?
Well, I mean...
Why would you do that? Like, that's just the dumbest thing they could have done. This movie is dying quickly to me. Like,
do you reckon? I mean, I'm looking forward to it with David Miller directing, the Deadpool 1 director.
No, I'm just so over. You're Terminator not... needs to reboot hard if they want to keep making them.
Yeah, I mean, look...
Like, they're bringing back the old cast.
Linda Hamilton's back.
I know, and they've got Arnie back, and I'm like, I don't care.
I almost would have thought it's time to... Like, I love Arnie. Don't get me wrong. I love Arnold. I love what he's done. I was thinking about it last night, though. I was thinking about Predator as well. Like, with Predator, I'm like... The last Predator movie I really enjoyed was Predator 2, but the one I love is still Predator 1, and nothing else has come close. And I was thinking, will they ever make a good Predator movie again? I was actually like... And Terminator, I've not really loved any Terminators in Judgment Day. I've tolerated, I quite like Sarah Connor Chronicles, but in terms of the movies, like, I haven't loved, like, Judgment Day to me was, like, one of the best movies I'd ever seen. I've watched it countless times since. Rise of the Machines, I still think it's okay, but it's ultimately quite flat. Salvation's, I thought, was woeful. Genesis, I liked more than some people, but it still wasn't good.
It's not good.
I don't know. Look, this feels like last roll of the dice for Terminator to me.
I don't even want them to roll this. I want them to put it back, wait a couple of years, and come up with a decent concept and reboot hard.
Why don't they do... I guess they
could... Or, even better, let it die. Let it just sit on the shelves and go, that was a really cool thing that we did, but it's done now.
Yeah, well.
We don't need to go back to that again and again.
Well, if the box office isn't great...
And the box office hasn't been great for a long time.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. If the box office isn't great, where's the appetite?
Exactly.
Because if you ever watched the Sarah Connor Chronicles, that was actually a pretty interesting show, like TV show. I enjoyed it. We watched two seasons. That was as interested as I've been in the story since Judgment Day. Like, bits and pieces of the Terminator movies I've enjoyed since, but, like, that was an interesting story. I found it very enjoyable. We watched it week to week, but like Genesis, I can like outside of a lot of shuffling around on the deck chairs kind of thing of the fucking Titanic, that's what it felt like. Like,
exactly,
I don't know. Like,
I feel like there's a lot of franchises that held that were held together by big action stars.
Yeah,
I'm talking like your Sylvester Stallone's, like your Rambo, your Rockies, Terminators, Die Hards.
Yes.
Like, franchises.
There's another series that I think could almost die.
Connected with a single actor that they did so well during their time.
Sure.
And with the exception of Rocky, which reboot with Creed, which I think is the way to do it, they've struggled to keep those franchises fresh.
Well, Die Hard, in fairness, has only had one movie that didn't make serious bank, and that was the last one. But the last one was terrible.
And that was when they tried to spin it out, though. They
tried to put Jai
Courtney in there and have him lead the franchise.
It was so bad, though.
It was terrible.
Like, I've loved all the Die Hards. 1 to 4, I think all of them are a lot of fun. Die Hard 5 was like, wasn't even like a Die Hard movie.
No.
It was like, this could have been any schlocky thing. With Die Hard now, I think they're doing a mistake in continuing. They're doing Bruce Willis as an older John McClane, and there's a younger guy playing the young John McClane. They're doing kind of like cutbacks back and forth. I think this has got disaster written all over it. I really do.
Yeah, I know. It doesn't sound fun, enticing but in
like,
any way.
Like, Michelle and I the other day watched Die Hard 3, a movie I fucking love. And I'm watching it and thinking, if you'd said to me, it's almost a perfect movie, and if you said to me all there was the first three, I'd be like, I'll take that.
Yeah.
Like, my box pack, I don't even want Die Hard 5. Like, it's that unimportant to me.
No, exactly.
Yeah.
So many of those franchises will not work unless you do basically a hard reboot.
Yeah.
But things like your Die Hards, you can't put John McClane as a teacher role. Like, you can't have him being the Yoda teaching the next generation.
It'd be stupid.
Like you could in Rocky. Like, Rocky worked because you could have that character, Sly's character, Rocky Balboa, teaching the next generation
Have you seen Creed 2?
I haven't seen Creed 2, no.
Yeah, I've actually just got that as well to watch. I'm actually interested in watching that. I think it sounds interesting. But you're right, yeah, Rocky was perfectly positioned to be a mentor.
Yeah, and I mean, Predator did well in that they pivoted away from Arnie quite quickly.
Yeah.
Like, the first one was all about Arnie, but the second movie...
Well, they couldn't sign him. They couldn't.
Exactly. They pivoted away from him, and that worked.
Like, it was fun, you know?
Predator 2 worked.
Yeah, it was fun.
They've just really
struggled. Mind you, like, Predator fans like me and like yourself love Predator 2, but it's nowhere near as good as the original.
Nowhere near as good.
Like, and I remember when it came out, the sense of disappointment was palpable. Like, people wanted Arnie. But, like, dude... I thought that last Predator movie... Like, I'll be honest. I thought that last Predator movie was so fucking average. Below average, even. You know?
It was terrible.
Like, I watched it. I was in Hawaii. We went to watch it. We were pretty pumped. I watched it, and I'm like, seriously, like, this is like... It was like child's play. It was awful.
I think, like, the era of that, like, over-muscled leading action hero, I think is almost over.
But why don't they get a bit fucking creative? This is where Hollywood loses.
They need to come up with a new star, a new action-oriented person.
Well, why not make series. Predator?
They did that with people like Jason Statham for a while.
Sure.
They had, like, the Transporter series.
Loved it. Crank.
And Crank, which was amazing. But, like, that Transporter series was what we should be doing. Get a new action star in a new role.
Yeah.
And then run that until it finishes, and then... It's finished.
Yeah, no, I agree.
Move on, get a new action star.
That's right. If the box office is sagging, like the box office on Predator was not good. No. Okay? So that, and there's Predator fans like me who love, I'm wearing a Predator fucking shirt just by total coincidence. Mm. Now, but like I was thinking about this last night and I wasn't depressed. I was just thinking, if I want to watch a Predator movie, I'm not going to Predator versus Aliens. And I'm not going to Predators, even though it's okay. And I'm certainly not going to The Predator. I'm going to Predator 1, and then if I'm in a good mood the next night, and like I'm flying solo, I'll go Predator 2, and I'm done. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I've been going to say this, though. With these franchises, they either need to get very creative. That's what I think they need. Like Terminator, put it in the future, forget about John Connor, and let's start doing stuff... In Predator, like, sorry, Terminator, in sort of like the future war world kind of thing. But just do it a lot better.
And my take on it would be you don't need to, it's not Predator. Don't set it in Terminator. Don't set it in that future.
Right.
If you want to do a post apocalyptic robots rule,
do it at your own thing. Just do your own movie, yeah.
Take your own spin.
I'd almost agree. I think Terminator.
Like, I think we've seen enough of the, like, the chrome plated.
Sure.
Walking humanoid robots that we know, like, if you look at technology now, they seem so incredibly outdated and poor that they'd never conquer the world. Like, you could believe that was, like, an outside chance when you're watching it in the 80s, you know?
Sure, of course. Yeah.
But now, if you watch a Terminator film, you're like, really? A bunch of giant chrome robots took over the world?
I hear you. Like, they're a product of a 1980s brain. Like, someone like me still responds to them. But you're right, there's different takes.
But... Update it, change a couple of details.
What about this? With a Predator movie, though, making Predator the lead. Something like that. Like, take it away from Predators in fucking suburban wherever, you know?
You run the risk of making Predators empathic, and at that point you lose that fear.
But I just feel like going bigger. Like, take Predator to another world where he's doing some stuff. Like, you know what I mean? Like, sort of going against type. Instead of Predator invades Earth again.
I mean, look, we read that Predator book.
Yeah.
And we had that, the first story, where space colony...
Yeah. Very slow start. Remember the start? Like 40 pages of lead up?
It was a slow start, but it was a really good story once.
It was good fun, yeah.
Crack on.
What about the Predator one, though? Remember in that comic book, there was one where the Predator has the ritual. You know, he goes onto the planet. I think there was aliens involved. Yeah, it was. It was Predator versus aliens. Remember that? But take out the alien, but he's on the Predator world fighting the aliens, and it was all Predator-centric. And like, you could have the Predators talking... Like in the version, like, so they're talking their own language, but you could maybe use subtitles. Like, have very little English in it. Like, I'm just trying to...
You don't want to make them more human. You don't want to feel something for a predator because it ruins the concept of a predator.
I suppose so. I'm just trying to get outside the box of, like, it comes to Earth and a ragtag bunch of...
That's what I said. Guys. Like, you go to a foreign planet, you have... It's set in the future where we're colonizing other planets.
Okay.
You start off slow with people going missing.
Yeah.
And you kind of see the aliens drop a bunch of eggs.
Sure.
And, like, start just make it as a seed planet.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Sorry, you see that the predators drop the eggs for the aliens.
Yes, yeah.
As a seed planet and send down a small hunting party and then...
Yeah, it sounds cool.
You basically end up in an Alien vs. Predator movie, but it's not set on Earth.
No.
Under ice in a temple, which made no sense.
I just think that those franchises are struggling. And potentially might even need to... Like, I'm not traumatized as an adult if they don't make any more Predator movies because I feel like they're just failing that much. Like, do you remember all their ideas?
What surprises me still is there are so many good novels that are being written every year.
Sure.
That are concepts that can go toe-to-toe...
Des Moines Soulfighter. Des Moines Blade of Exile. Des Moines Sea of Innocence. Grab them, kids. Like,
yeah, I was thinking about others, but...
Well, hey, don't get me wrong. I mean, my books have sold plenty of copies on Amazon. Like,
they have, yeah.
Check them out, listeners. But you're right. Someone coming with new inventive concepts and... But,
like,
aren't
there are
tied
plenty
into,
of books and book series that could go toe-to-toe thematically and in a film with some of these other concepts.
Well,
like,
you can
look at any of the series that Brandon Sanderson have written.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
If you look at the... there's just so many options there to run a whole universe, spin it out into 5 films, and then end it.
To be honest, Brendan Sanderson, we've mentioned before on the show, that Mistborn series, dude, like, how that is in a TV show or a movie, I don't know.
It's been constantly in this kind of limbo of...
But it's so much better.
Gets to production, falls out of production. Gets in, falls out. It's...
But, dude, someone was saying to me last night that so many of the Marvel movies have just the same sort of basic plot. Like, give me a Mistborn series as a movie. I'd support that in a heartbeat. It's so good. Like, how they're not picking that kind of stuff up. I know these things get stuck in development hell, but that's just an example of some of the original content that's out there that's begging to be sucked dry by Hollywood. You know what I mean? Like,
but that's what I mean. Like, and then they're like, that author alone has 3 or 4 series that could very easily go straight into movies now.
I'm telling you, Way of the Kings, the prologue scene, one of the strongest things I've seen.
I mean, that's Stormlight Archive, like it's not finished.
Yeah.
But in the same way that Harry Potter wasn't finished when they started doing the Harry Potter films.
Yeah. But, like, that had one of the strongest openings of any book that I've read in the last 30 years. Like, it blew me away from a prologue. Hard to do to a reader like me who's not reading much fantasy anymore. And I was like, seriously impressive. 10 out of 10.
And for me, that's one author. Like, you could pick...
This is one guy, yeah.
You could pick any of probably a dozen authors off the top of your head and come up with multiple series where they could run...
Totally.
5 to 10 movies.
Instead, we've got fucking Fox exploiting the Predator with one of the worst movies of last year.
Instead of going back and forth, just continually retreading old ground. And we're not doing anything
bad. But we're not bringing up inventive, creative stuff. It's very...
They're doing exactly what they did with Predator and Alien back in the day. It was...
But worse.
Yeah.
A lot worse. Yeah, anyway. Look, Aquaman 2, writer is attached to Aquaman sequel. Same writer who was on the original Aquaman. I mean, this news came out about 24, 48 hours after the news of the Trench spinoff.
Yep.
But I think it was just their way of just getting some information out there. There is definitely a sequel on the way. The same guy who wrote it's attached, doing the first treatment.
When Aquaman 1 made $1 billion, a sequel was greenlit.
Yeah.
No one had to question that.
Exactly.
So it looks like we're getting more Aquaman.
Cool.
It's probably the most successful... I mean, it's the most successful money-wise.
Sure. For a DC movie ever.
DC movie ever.
Be Dark Knight.
I don't know whether I'd rather have... Would you rather have stakes in the Aquaman property or the Wonder Woman property right now?
Wonder Woman in a heartbeat.
Really?
Longer legs. Longer legs. Yeah.
She does have long legs, but...
What do you mean? What do you mean by stakes? Do I want to be director attached or producer or something?
Would you rather be financially involved in, like, let's say, an executive producer or something, where there's a return in money based on how well it does?
Probably Wonder Woman. Probably Wonder Woman. But, like, either I take Stu in a heartbeat. Both of them are a franchise on the way out. But Wonder Woman will the Aquaman craze will last maybe until the sequel. Wonder Woman, I think, she'll hang around for a number of years. Probably Wonder Woman, but it's close. It's not, Both are very on the fucking up. The only thing about Wonder Woman is that they delayed it until 2020, which surprises me because I think you do lose a bit of heat in that year. But
they absolutely have. Like, at the moment, there's almost no heat on Wonder Woman.
Yeah, but it'll ramp back up again, though. It'll be a big movie. I'll be interested to see if it breaks a billion. I mean, Aquaman broke a billion. I didn't think Aquaman was brilliant at all. Like, you know, but it
would. I thought Wonder Woman was a far better movie.
Yeah, for sure. Me too. I personally enjoyed it a lot more.
Far better movie, but
it made big money as well, though. I look longer term and think Wonder Woman will hang around. I think she's going to be a feature for the next 5-10 years. Like, Aquaman, he may recede a little bit, you know. I think the heat on Aquaman might...
I actually think the opposite is true.
Really? Okay.
Yeah.
Well, you like to play the opposite games. She said that doesn't surprise
me. I think that Patty Jenkins is far better than a DCU movie.
Right.
I think as a director, she's actually lowering herself slightly to build a bigger franchise. I think she's kind of forced to make decisions she wouldn't otherwise make. I think Gal Gadot is also a far bigger star outside of DC. Like, she's been in far more movies than Jason Momoa.
And but she's movies more that have made money? Anything that's made money that she's been huge in? Like, I mean, she had a bit player in Fast and Furious. Like, she was in that movie that I like, which is in the lingerie, but, like, that made no money. I mean, Gal Gadot's very reliant on Wonder Woman. If she stopped being Wonder Woman, I don't know what her box office appeal is going to be like long term.
Oh, no. I just...
I could be wrong. I mean, But name me some hits that she's been in. Like, you know, what's she been in that's been a big hit that's not Wonder Woman?
Fast and Furious, you said it yourself. She was
a bit player, though. She was tiny in Fast and the Furious.
She's in 3 movies.
Yeah, I don't think that she's got huge cachet outside of Wonder Woman yet. I mean, she's very good. I like her a lot. I mean, hey, look, you're asking me what I want to be invested in. Probably Wonder Woman, because I think that I'll probably try to blend her into other movies. But both are strong franchises. Like, I'll take either. I'm not slamming Aquaman. That's a very strong franchise.
I feel like it's harder to get a Wonder Woman franchise that maintains that level of quality than it is to get an Aquaman that maintains its level of quality.
Why? Why? They've got a very good director on Wonder Woman. Why would they?
They do, but I don't think she wants to stay on Wonder Woman that long. I think she honestly didn't want to do number 2, but they offered her enough money and she went, okay, I'll do number 2.
No, I disagree. I think
when you look at her track record of the movies she's made in the past, I think this is a
fantastic movie. She made Monster, didn't she?
Yeah, Academy Award winning director for that.
Sexism kept her out of the industry for, like, out of film directing for 10 years.
Yeah, exactly.
It's ridiculous.
But after Wonder Woman, she made a lot of headway in getting, you know, job offers and wanting to do movies. And
yeah, she's a woman.
I think she's now in a position where she doesn't need DC to do what she wants to do.
Hmm.
Whereas I think before she may have needed something to kind of
jumpstart. Oh, yeah, she could leave. Like, her price has gone way up since she took on Wonder Woman.
And I think she way probably up. Should leave. I don't think the DC is a great vehicle to
This is you love to shit on DC movies in the franchise. Like, I'd love to see
any evidence that doesn't support what I'm saying. Like, a single piece of evidence. Because there's none. There's nothing out there.
$1 billion on Aquaman is proof they're heading in the right direction. The Joker
movie. Wonder Woman, Dave. I'm talking about Wonder Woman and Patty Jenkins.
Wonder Woman made $700-800 million.
Like, is better off not making blockbuster movies, but making movies that are critically acclaimed.
Talk to Patty Jenkins and her agents, Stu. I don't know what to tell you. Like, I think she'll do...
Maintaining the quality of Wonder Woman is a much tougher job. You've got far bigger stars working on that movie than you do in Aquaman. James Wan is very replaceable as a director. There are a good dozen directors that could do what he did.
Well, dude, like, we're going to have to agree to disagree. I don't know what your point is. Like, yes, he's replaceable. So is she. They're both replaceable.
Patty Jenkins is far harder to replace. With someone of the same quality,
Patty Jenkins
is a far better director than James Wan.
Look, you are right. Her quote is... been driven up immensely by the success of Wonder Woman. Assume Wonder Woman 2 makes more or equal to Wonder Woman 1. It'll continue to be driven up. She won't stay at DC forever. You're right in that regard. I mean, she might do a third movie depending on how her contract was signed. If they signed her for 2 more movies, we don't know. It's definitely not announced.
Given that she was so reluctant to... Like, there was a long wait where they were trying to...
But that was negotiating. That was negotiating for more money.
Yeah, but I seriously doubt she signed for anything more than 2 pictures.
Hmm. What, do you mean two more? Like Wonder Woman 2 and 3?
Wonder Woman 2 and possibly one other. I think
that's what I reckon she would have
absolute
done.
Limit. I doubt they've even known that much.
But anyway, but look, I mean, we're a comic book podcast. Like, I mean, obviously the DC, in my eyes, the DC movie franchise is moving one way and that's upwards. There was a huge article in Forbes, which you've got more information on this. We should really just jump to it now. Some big, an extensive Forbes report came out, which is very optimistic on the DC franchise. It had some big announcements inside it, such as, a lot of it was just sort of positive press on the results of Aquaman. But James Gunn will supposedly not be using Harley in the Suicide Squad movie. And the
That's been somewhat debunked.
Okay.
That's a back and forth. They keep arguing, will she, won't she?
Sure. And the Jared Leto Joker movie is reportedly... Now, these are reports. They were reported... It was an opinion piece that's been reported as fact, but supposedly the Jared Leto Joker movie, Mad Love with Harley Quinn, is not moving forward. Obviously... Margot Robbie's moving very fast forward with Birds of Prey, and you would anticipate more of those kind of movies. But overall, it was a very big positive puff piece about the DC franchise. I mean, that's the direction they're headed in. They've broken $1 billion. They've got the Joker with Joaquin Phoenix coming out later this year. They're probably looking at award consideration for that. You know, like, there's big things coming. Shazam's getting a lot of positive hype. Even I'm flipping a little bit, and I think it will make money. I mean, it's a franchise on the way up, but... You know, it needed to be, but all the ticks are in the right direction. If I was a Warner stockholder, I'd be happy about how things are going in that sphere. They've kind of turned the corner. And you can't argue with a $1 billion movie. Like, it's a big success.
No. I'm in fact arguing for it. Whereas you seem to be...
Oh, no, I'm not at all.
Against it.
No, I'm not at all. You asked me a question about which I'd rather be, and I said both are very strong candidates. I'd take either, Stu. Like, really, I mean... It's almost much of a muchness to me. I almost don't even care. I'm just like, both of them are headed the right way. But, you know, I think Gal Gadot has been signed for more than one or two movies. So I think Gal Gadot will hang around. I think she's an important figurehead for the whole franchise. I guarantee you the next 5 years you'll be seeing a lot of Wonder Woman. Like, that's what I'm thinking. Aquaman as well. You'll see a lot of both of them until literally one of the movies doesn't make money.
Forward, I think a lot of things have changed, like substantially changed.
Mm.
Because they're not doing those crossovers anymore. Like they've said, they're not looking at a conjoined universe.
Sure. But wait until you see a crossover, and I'm sure you will see it as well. Like a crossover in the one or two characters crossing over. That's kind of what I'm talking about. Like, we've had this conversation before. Like, if these movies make money... which I think they will, you will get to a scene where someone's going, let's throw them together again, or let's throw a couple of them together again. Let's try to sort of blend the universes a little bit and try to make more money. Like, that's what will happen.
Be aware, when they sign these multi-deal contracts, one of the clauses that they have in all these contracts is, like, when you sign for a 7-picture deal, so many of them are specified as you're a named, like, it is a solo film.
Yeah, I hear you.
So picture, like, Thor in Thor Ragnarok.
Sure.
Like, he may have shared it with Hulk, but that was technically his named film.
I agree with you.
Like, so, well, no, in some of the contracts, in most of the contracts, when you're doing multi-picture deals, they specify that some are team-up movies.
Yeah.
But, like, they actually say, you will have this many named films as a minimum.
But there's also room, and it happens all the time, to negotiate with actors... Like you've seen it in Marvel movies, they've negotiated with actors in the course of the Marvel movies to get them to do little appearances that might not be considered an official appearance, but, like, money changes hands. And, like, these actors are very viable. This is the thing. The actors are the least... Like, this is something that, like, a lot of people never get. The actors are almost, like, the least... They're powerful, but they're also the most viable, tradable commodity. The producers and directors have a lot more control in a lot of ways. Like, these actors are kind of traded like cattle horses a lot. Like, in between these movies, it does happen. Like, people cut deals, they, you know, get the agents, and generally the money changes hands, and that's what happens. Like, think of like a sports thing. It's
not as common as I think you're making.
No, but it does happen in these franchise movies with multiple stars.
I can't think of any examples that...
It happened in Marvel with appearances of, like, Captain America in that movie where he changed his face. When Loki was walking along. Like, that was an out-of-contract negotiation. So it wasn't counted as an official Cap appearance kind of thing. That's just an example. Like, that's one that made the news. Like, most of this stuff doesn't make the news. It's internal. Like, the actors don't... Like, when Patty Jenkins is negotiating, like she was, clearly negotiating for multiple months over Wonder Woman 2, you know, they're not releasing that information direct to the press. The negotiations went on for ages. You don't know the context of the contract. You've not seen the contract. Like, it would be a layered contract that would probably have two movies and this and that, and all sorts of different things would be moving around. Like, and that's how they get the actors to go. They give the actors a producing credit, do this and that. Like, there's a bigger negotiation goes on than some of these press reports. Like, anyway, I mean, both are very positive franchises, though. Aquaman and Wonder Woman on the way up, and Aquaman's the one that's just broken $1 billion. So, you know, right now, today, yeah, its stock is just steadily rising. Like, so, you know, hop on a rising ship. I mean, I don't know what else to say. Anyway, we've got The Irishman. We've known since 2017 that De Niro has been digitally de-aged for this movie. The film's editor, long-time producing partner to Scorsese, Thelma Schoonmaker, has revealed the first half of the story will feature De Niro as the young version of real-life gangster Frank the Irishman Sharon, alongside a digitally de-aged Al Pacino as the young-slash-alive version of Jimmy Hoffa. Now, Industrial Light & Magic is doing the de-aging process. She hasn't seen a completed scene of the de-aged characters yet. Netflix hasn't announced an official release date, but October, November 2019 is rumoured. What do you think, Stu? Like, this is going to be an interesting movie.
Basically. Not for me. I'm not watching it. Fuck that.
Scorsese?
I don't want to see de-aged De Niro. I don't want to see de-aged...
So you're going to turn your nose up as Martin Scorsese acting with, like, Pacino and De Niro and Joe Pesci and everything? To me, that's a must-see.
I mean, purely because it's on streaming, I'm going to see it because it... effectively free.
Martin Scorsese, great director and great actors. Like, I'm interested. Like, I'm interested in Car Crash. Like, this is a lot of work for de-aging to do. Everything I've ever seen de-aged, I'm like, at best, I'm like, that's pretty good, but I don't know if I'd want it for, like, Michael Douglas, for example, in Ant-Man.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's good, but it's also the bit uncanny valley. Like, I can tell.
Exactly.
You know.
Exactly.
So this is going to be...
Do you really want that for half a movie?
I want to see it for myself, so I'm interested, but, like, if you're saying to me, would I want to pay $20 to see it at cinema, no. Maybe not, but would I watch it on streaming? 100%, but I'm interested to see what they can actually do. Like, they're putting a lot of pressure on this de-aging technology. Like, these, apparently it's being shot... The point of the story is it's a book. I've not read the book. It's looking back, so it's like a reflective look back at their life. So apparently she's got the movie cut down in the sort of present versions. But it's a question of how much is de-aged. And they're saying at least half. And, like, the costs on this are huge. Like, Netflix is obviously going for a war consideration here. Like, they're trying to get... They've got a huge name, Scorsese, and they're giving him the best actors, like the legends of the industry. And it's kind of like, see what you can do. But, like, this has got to be a major investment. Like... You know, this de-aging technology, it's not been used.
Do you still consider these guys the best actors right now?
Well, that's an interesting question.
De Niro certainly was the best.
Hmm.
But that was a long time ago.
Well, I'll answer that question.
And I think the same, you could make the same argument for Pacino.
Yeah, look, they're legends.
Looking like Scarface. Like, he was top of his game.
Oh,
when you're looking like Raging Bull.
Heat, yeah.
Like De Niro, Scorsese, like Perfect Storm.
Hmm.
Definitely. You look anything in the last 20 years?
Oh, look, I mean...
Oh, you're struggling.
They're like retired ball players to me. They're legends, but, like, they're legends and their filmographies, to a certain point, are amazing. Yeah, of course. The movies that they even do now are not good.
And now you're picking two stars that haven't been relevant for a good 20 years.
Well, I'd argue De Niro's relevant. I'd argue De Niro's relevant. He's been in a lot of comedies, and he has a great cachet in the industry, so, like, well, he's relevant.
Looking in terms of... Relevant in terms of, first, box office performance, and secondly, like, award critical consensus. None of his movies in the last 20 years have really been up there in either category.
Hmm.
So I don't think, industry terms today, he's that relevant.
Well,
he still holds a lot of sway. He's Scorsese still a name.
Scorsese is
the only one of these three that still hasn't really missed a step. The other two haven't been doing that well for the last
while. I would say this, though.
And to top that off, you're now asking both of them to act with heavy machinery attached to their head and face.
But that is interesting to me. Like,
see, that to me is you're not even playing to their strengths anymore.
Well, yeah, they're old men. I mean, dude... Yes, of course. Like, but I would say this. They haven't really had great material. Scorsese's going to bring in them top quality material. it's a chance to flex those acting muscles that sort of like a De Niro has literally grown old and flabby in the last 20 years. He was fucking razor sharp. Yeah, Casino.
He's been offered scripts that are more...
I don't know. I think the industry's changed. I think the industry over the last 10 years has changed a lot towards tentpole franchise almost 100%. Like, I think
either of them wanted to do high-quality movies of the last 20 years, they could absolutely have done them.
Yeah, I mean...
I feel like they've made these choices to be in the movies that they've been in.
Well, they've taken movies for... Especially De Niro has taken movies for money, like, for sure, in the last 20 years.
Yeah.
Ever since Meet the Parents, he's done mostly, I'd describe them as... below average to average comedies, like more than he's done serious movies.
He's phoned them in.
But that said, okay, he's phoned them in. I would think Scorsese, he brings a high quality threshold. Scorsese brings the performances out of his actors. He's done it before. I don't think Pacino's worked with Scorsese. So Pacino is an actor's actor. He's almost in retirement. They're hauling him out. They've got Joe Pesci out. Yes.
Yeah, don't even get me started on Joe Pesci. That's...
Well,
a mistake.
My point is, I think that it's a gathering of the old guard for one last blast, and I'm sort of hoping it is something because De Niro is capable of bringing his A game. He is.
Well, my problem is these guys, their A game does not involve de-aging technology. Let's be brutally honest here.
True.
Their heyday. 70s and 80s. 70s and 80s.
Although, dude, look, if you want latter period De Niro that was awesome, look at Casino. Look at Heat. Like, they're the kind of last pinnacles of their performances, like mid-90s. That was...
Yeah, sure.
I mean...
25 years
ago. Pacino's been in decent movies since, but not a ton. He doesn't act that much. He does a lot of stage work as well. He's done, like, King Richard multiple times, you know?
Exactly. And you want to... Someone like Andy Serkis has made a career from acting in those performance capture suits, which is not a natural fit for a lot of these actors. Like, Andy Serkis, he's made it his own. Like, sure. He's now exceptionally good at it.
Signature. You know,
and actors like Mark Ruffalo has said multiple times that it was actually incredibly uncomfortable to go from acting in a film to acting in those, like, pajama-like outfits with dots all over your face.
It would be too.
I mean, it's a really weird thing to do and have to adapt to it.
I think to even be able to, I'm not an actor, but to be able to do it is one thing, but to be able to do it well and actually bring a part of yourself.
Now, there's no doubt that these guys can act.
Well, there's no doubt of that. There's zero doubt.
But we're putting them in a situation they've never had to act in before.
That said, though, dude, do you not think that, like, guys of that caliber, and they really are a far superior caliber to most actors, aren't capable of adapting, given the right environment, the right director, sink or swim attitude? I do think I think Pacino...
But I don't think they've got this sink or swim attitude. Like, why would De Niro, Pesci, or Pacino be looking at this movie as... We've got to give this 110%. Legacy. We've got to...
Oh, they would be.
At this point, they're thinking, well, we're doing this for a paycheck. Let's be honest. That's what's driven their decisions for the last 20 years.
But I think this... Like, I think... I hear your point. And De Niro is very... I mean, Pesci's retired. Literally retired.
Yeah.
But De Niro has kept working, and he has taken so many roles for the money. I think this one, teaming up with Martin Scorsese... considering the caliber of that work was so high, is like, this is one for the legacy. This is one we are going to take very seriously because it's Scorsese, blah, 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 and it's all of us together. Like, De Niro and Pacino have only shared, like, that one scene in Heat on screen ever.
I feel like this has come around 10 to 15 years too late. If they'd have done that 10 to 15 years ago, I would have been far more hyped for that movie.
I'd agree with you. I mean,
but these last 10 years have aged all of them significantly.
Sure.
Like,
sure.
De Niro looks old now.
Well, so does Pacino.
Properly old. Pacino's aged well.
Yeah, but he's old.
But and don't get me started on Pesci.
I don't even know what Joe Pesci looks
Pesci
like.
Pesci should absolutely not come out from retirement.
Pesci looked old as fuck in whatever the last thing was Scorsese got him to do.
Exactly.
Yeah, but, like, dude, do I think that... This is why I put it in the news. I think it's a legacy attempt, but what makes it even more tricky is the de-aging. That adds another layer of complexity, what already would be a challenging thing for these guys.
And for me, it's not the quality of de-aging tech. Like, Industrial Light and Magic are doing the de-aging.
Sure.
And they've had success doing it before.
Yeah. But usually for a scene or two, not for a fucking, like, hour and a half.
Exactly. You can always tell when they're de-aging someone.
Sometimes I just think, I mean, this news bounced out and I put in the notes. You know what I did? I had a day off the other day. I put on Mean Streets, Harvey Keitel, like 1973 Scorsese, right at the beginning of Scorsese's directing career, before many of his signature movies, one of his earliest, you know, movies. Fantastic. And I just think there's part of me that thinks, like, it's a young Harvey Keitel, a young De Niro, actually, as well. I just sometimes think, I don't know, maybe it's just best to let your past speak for itself.
Their legacy is already well and truly...
It's amazing.
...created.
Like, yeah, like...
Like, their legacy is already there, and it's back in the 70s and 80s.
And 90s. Like, they were acting in the 90s. Like, Heat's 90s, and Casino's 90s. Like, they got nominated for those for these pictures. Like, Casino's one of my favourite Scorsese movies. I love Casino.
Yeah, but
you know,
once we hit 2000,
it dries up fast. Well, suddenly you meet the parents, meet the Falkers,
and then you hit 2010, and you're like, okay, this is your last call.
What's the last movie?
If we want to do a proper team up with these sort of guys,
yeah,
I feel like 2010 was kind of the cutoff.
What's Pacino's name? Like top three Pacino movies for you, and what's the last movie he was even like? I can even remember him being good in. Like, was he in Insomnia? I think he was. He was okay in Insomnia.
He was all right in the comedic role in the Ocean's movies.
Yes, he was in Ocean's 3.
I quite enjoyed.
Yeah, he was. Yeah, Ocean's 3 when he's like, I cut like a hammer. I slice like a hammer.
Yeah, whichever one that was.
Ocean's 13.
12? Ocean's 13.
Ocean's 13, right. Yeah.
He was all right in that role, like a comedic kind of role.
Yeah,
it
was that good, was yeah. Fun. But that was a light role for Pacino.
It was a light role, and that was also 15 years ago, maybe?
I don't know how long, but a while ago. 10, I'd say. You know, I was working where I am now then, so it was about 10 years ago, you know.
There you go. Okay. So that was a pretty light role, though.
Sure, I wouldn't have even thought of that role. I mean, to me, the last movie that I loved him in, I don't know when he did Glengarry Glen Ross, but that's a lot of good people in that movie. It's early 90s, I think. I mean, but I would say Heat for me, in terms of those guys, is... the pinnacle, and for De Niro, Casino, like it's the last crest, you know what I mean, before we dip into Comedy Central. Pacino, I feel, has done fewer movies in the last 10 years than De Niro. I don't think of a lot of Pacino.
I think a lot
movies.
Of people have done fewer movies than De Niro in the last 10 years.
Yeah, I think Robert De Niro, like, I would just say he's made his money, though. So this is what I'm saying. I think this is one for the legacy. Like, yeah, they're getting decent paycheck. Netflix is basically underwriting this movie and saying,
but look, let's say you're De Niro. Do you really want to pin your legacy on a movie with Joe Pesci as a major character in 2019?
Well, but think of two of De Niro's best movies, Goodfellas and Casino. Joe Pesci's a huge part of both of those movies, Martin Scorsese joints. Like, two of his best movies.
Yeah, this is Pesci. 10 years after he retired.
Yeah, look, I'm interested, man. Like,
there's
interested.
A lot of problems with this concept as a whole.
It fascinates me, though. It fascinates me,
when you look
me
at
like...
each piece individually, you're like, yeah, this is great. And then you look at the year that they're putting it all together in, and sure. You think, ooh,
yeah.
That's not a smart move.
What's your top three Pacino movies, if you have to pick three? I've got three in my back pocket, but you go first.
Oh, man, I'd struggle to find three that I can remember from my head.
Okay. I'll give you three.
Scarface is obviously...
It's great.
Obviously one.
Sure.
And it's I think fantastic. Everything else is kind of... Look, he's done some great movies, but
yeah.
It's Scarface. It's head and shoulders above everything else.
I like Scarface a lot. I mean, I'd also say Heat. I think Heat's fantastic. I think Dog Day Afternoon, Serpico. I mean, he's done a lot of great movies. Look, I love Pacino. Pacino is kind of my guy. In Heat, I used to know all the lines. You know what I'm saying? Like, I think that's one of the... It's not even a Martin Scorsese movie. It's Michael Mann, but it's fantastic. It's a fucking great movie. I don't know. Pacino's a very talented actor, but Serpico's a... If you're looking for a good 70s piece... Like cop story, like crime, corruption inside the force and stuff, based on a true story. Serpico is great, but Dog Day Afternoon. But you're right, Scarface is, I mean, iconic. It's amazing. I think it's 81. If I'm not wrong, I think 81. A long time ago, he did one with I think it's called Barefoot in Needle Park. Back in like late 60s, early 70s, Needle Park was like literally a heroin. Section, I think a section of Central Park that like junkie shot up in.
Mm-hmm.
It's a beautiful piece. It's a beautiful little mood piece. He's a super talented actor. Now, Stu, turning back to the news, you already announced some news on the Black Widow movie. may be rated R, according to some reports. What do you think of this, Jude? Does this come from Jess Schneider? It's not confirmed, but it's being rumoured in Hollywood at the moment.
I doubt it's going to be rated R, but it could be, and it'd be a cool movie if it is, but I doubt it. I think it's very unlikely.
Is that a segue into us advertising next week's Trade of the Week? Black Widow.
Can be, yeah.
Mark Waid's Black Widow
next week. But, look, I feel like Marvel's now locked into this idea of every movie works with every other movie. Sure. They're all somewhat standalone, but they are all consistent in their characters.
Although they have said there'll be R-rated films Disney will do, like Deadpool, for example.
Well, yeah, but that's not already part of the MCU.
Sure.
But if they want to run Deadpool as a R-rated character, they'll absolutely do that.
Mm.
But it's going to be very hard for them to bring Deadpool into the MCU as a cameo.
Don't you think?
Without making it comedically like they've censored him.
Yeah.
Which is the way to do it. Like, I think obviously the way to do it.
If he's in Avengers, he'll be censored, for sure. But in his own movie, he'll be R-rated.
Yeah, but I'm thinking, like, the Deadpool Christmas edition, which...
Sure. Once Upon a Deadpool,
where they, like, completely censored him to it out of PG.
Yeah.
That, but he's kind of in the movie going, why the bleep am I censored?
Yeah.
I can't get away with anything. Like, that's a funny way to include him in the movie, plus have him R-rated outside.
I'm looking really forward to that.
But we're going the other way with Black Widow. Whereas Black Widow has already been introduced as a character in these PG to M-rated movies.
Yeah.
So I imagine they're going to stick with that.
What do you think about... Did you see Red Sparrow? What did you think? Because everyone was saying, oh, that's Black Widow done, you know?
No, I still never saw Red Sparrow.
To be honest, I didn't think it quite met the hype. It was entertaining. We watched it. It's decent, but I didn't think it was anything amazing. Like, I preferred Atomic Blonde, which is a mess of a movie, but I thought it was more entertaining than Red Sparrow.
I liked Atomic Blonde. I thought it was a fun little...
You did, yeah.
...action flick on its own.
I thought it was fun, too.
Charlize Theron was great.
Comparing the two, I thought that was a superior film to Red Sparrow. But, I mean, Red Sparrow got the...
I mean, there's significant problems with Atomic Blonde, but...
I thought it was a mess in a lot of ways, but it's still interesting.
But you know? I felt like it was a fun enough movie that you could just switch your brain off and...
Fair enough. Now, we've got a big thing here. What did you... So, Aladdin, a much talked-about movie on the Signal of Doom's calendar.
Yes, it is.
Now, a TV spot came out for the upcoming live-action Aladdin, which showcased a short first glimpse at a very blue Will Smith as a genie. This got savage internet reaction and memes. Like, I mean, I thought it was laughable. But, like, what did you think, Stu?
I've heard it referred to, this is a Game of Thrones reference, as the Craster of the Disney franchises. As in, it first makes our childhood, then it rapes it. Because this blue genie looked terrible.
It looked shocking.
In every way, it looked like a really puffy CGI version of Will Smith playing Will Smith like he has done in every other movie.
It looked like a 90s video game fucking, like, you know, like, sort of, like, it was just missing the dotty sort of, like, sort of graphics.
Like, we just needed the edge of the pixels going around. Like,
yeah.
People were saying, I hope the CGI is not finished, and in the final, they just removed that character entirely.
Well, I mean, why would Disney, with so much writing on this, like, I mean, this has been a much talked about fucking movie, and obviously they're under the shadow of, like, Robin Williams and everything. Why would they come out with something so lackluster?
I don't know. It's fine. I'll tell you what this does do, then. Makes me even more confident that they're not going to be putting Robin Williams in this movie.
Yeah, I must admit, I am not as confident as I was, but, like, it's still a train wreck. Regardless of that, this is just a train wreck. Someone was saying, look, I mean, I take this for what it's worth. This was a Facebook comment. I mean, I fucking can't stand these guys. Like, he goes, oh, it's in his will that Disney can't use Robin Williams' voice. Now, is it? Like, is it really? Like, I'd be interested to know. I've never heard this before in my life.
It wouldn't be Disney named. It would be that my, like, pre-recorded material cannot be used without the consent of
sure.
family or something like that.
But, like, that doesn't that tie back to agreements that Robin Williams would have made when he was shooting Aladdin? Like, did he sign his rights away then and there? He can't retrospectively, like...
Well, no, but if you've shot footage for a film and that film gets released and marketed, blah, 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 and then 10 years later they say, we want to go back and use the footage that we had, they need your permission to show that footage.
Do they?
Yeah.
Okay. I mean, I wouldn't have even thought that. I would have thought that if he... Rob Williams famously recorded, like, hundreds of hours of extra
stuff. I mean, you can get away with it if it's, like, a documentary made on the making of kind of thing.
That's kind of more what I'm thinking of. Like, yeah.
I think you can get away with that. I think that's fine.
But you're talking about inserting it into a new movie.
Because they can't edit you in weird ways and...
If they made Aladdin 2, they couldn't have just used Ron Williams without his consent, what you're saying. And
no, because he'd be a cast member, and they can't. You can't put a cast member in a movie without good their
point.
Consent.
No, good point, good point. Well, we'll see. I mean, look, regardless of our captain's call, this was just a fucking woeful trailer.
Oh, it was terrible. People was were awful. Slamming that Jafar looked way too young.
And hot. I was saying hot Jafar.
Yeah.
One of the poorest moments on Collider was when the lead guy who was talking was saying, "What's the name of the guy?" And someone goes, "Aladdin?" He's like, "Oh, yeah." And that's like, are you on a fucking major podcast and video site? Like, does David Finn need to step into your role? Like, if you don't know the name of Aladdin, go home, you're drunk.
That's a low point. Yeah, that's a low point.
So we've never seen that.
Aladdin, I didn't think Aladdin looked bad. I thought he looked fine.
Aladdin looked fine.
I thought Jasmine looked fine.
The problem was the genie.
I'm hoping that Abu is done well. The magic carpet looks good.
Yeah.
Like, even in the trailer that we saw, though, he opened the lamp in the treasure-filled room.
Yeah.
That's not what happens.
No, it's not, actually.
The cave is closed, dead, the treasure's disappeared and melted.
Yeah, yeah. Have they not seen the fucking cartoon?
And he ends up in, like, this empty, barren land and just holding a lamp.
Have they not seen the fucking cartoon?
I know.
Like, the more I think about it, I'm going to go on a record here. The more I think about it, the less I fucking need this piece of shit remake. Like, I'll be honest, like, I know Disney are determined to do live-action adaptions, and they've done it of, like, Beauty and the Beast, et cetera, et cetera. What was the other one they've done? Is it Cinderella or something they did recently? And then there's...
Oh, it's a Jungle Book.
Jungle Book has been... They've had successes, is my point. And I know they've got Dumbo coming out. I would consider
Dumbo's coming out. Lion King's coming out. Lion King's getting mixed reviews at the moment.
But I love those originals so much. But I am quite open. Like, Jungle Book was awesome. Like, I'm open to a remake. But, like, when I saw that fucking Will Smith, how that looked, I was like, this is poor. This is not Will Smith. This is the fucking people doing the special effects. Like, this is terrible.
The other issue I'm having is I can't see a way to fix that. Like, I've seen trailers before where
hundreds
explosions
of millions of
look
dollars?
Super fake.
Yeah.
And you kind of go, oh, that doesn't look great. And then they spend a lot of money and fix those things to make it a more seamless transition.
I'd almost say go back to the drawing board and do it again. Like, in terms
but when
of
you're
the,
looking at that, like, puffy blue Will Smith Michelin Man crossover.
Yeah, thank you. Yes.
He felt like a Smurf
Michelin Man. Yes.
Crossed with Will Smith. And when I say crossed, I mean Will Smith's face, like, photoshopped onto the body.
Maybe, dude, you'll find that, like, their solution will be to dig back into the archives and they will pull Rob Williams out. And it might have to be to support what is otherwise a very weak picture.
I don't know. I just...
Talk about a guy who does roles for money. Will Smith has got to be up there. He is a... He has... I love Will Smith. But Jesus Christ, he's made some weird decisions in his time. You know? Yeah. After Earth. Who could ever forget that?
Well, yeah, trying to get his son into the movie industry.
And Scientology. Like, I was like, you know, whenever Scientology is the basis for a movie, do they not learn from Battlefield Earth and what happened there?
Whenever Scientology is anything, do they not learn? Like,
well, they obviously don't.
Jesus Christ.
Yeah, so we, I mean, our bet goes on, but regardless of our bet, that was just a train wreck of a fucking trailer.
Yeah, it was. That was a bad trailer.
Now, Brie Larson has reportedly signed on for 7 Marvel movies, according to reports, citing Hollywood Reporter as their source. Comic book movie has reports that Larson signed a 7-picture deal that will see her playing Carol Danvers in Captain Marvel, Avengers Endgame, and 5 other films. The report adds the actress is being paid $5 million for Carol's solo movie alone, a figure that comfortably exceeds the amount earned by Chadwick Boseman for Black Panther, $2 million, and stands at least 10 times for Robert Downey Jr.'s fee for Iron Man, $500 grand. Let's not forget RDJ had a huge back-end deal, which he profited from enormously.
Well, yeah, and look, this tracks with what we've heard before. I think that don't be put off by the fact that she's making 5 and Chadwick Boseman made 2 in Black Panther. There's significant...
Well, she was a bigger name coming in. Like, she
exactly
had...
right. Chadwick Boseman was almost unheard of coming into Black Panther.
I hadn't heard of him. Like, so, yeah.
Whereas Brie Larson, when she signed, had just won the Oscar for Best
Actress.
Academy
Award-winning actress. She also brings some indie cred.
She just won the Oscar when she signed. Chadwick Boseman was almost unheard of. Captain Marvel was always meant to carry this franchise long-term.
yeah.
and almost replace RDJ as a kind of linchpin character.
They're investing heavily in her. It will be interesting to see how the movie is and how she does play. Because,
yeah, well, her and Doctor Strange are kind of meant to be the central core few characters that will drive this forward in the same way that Cap and Iron Man and in some ways Thor... have held the original run through.
Got to be honest, I'm a lot less excited by the thought of Captain Marvel and Doctor Strange carrying the franchise than Captain America and Iron Man, personally. But, you know, we'll see what happens.
We'll see what happens. I think there's going to be some major changes going forward. Like, yeah. We always knew that this wasn't going to continue forever.
Are you at all concerned? This isn't a sexist comment. It's more I'm asking because the fucking haters on the internet who go on and on and on about how boring she is. Are you concerned about her charisma potential over long term?
No.
You're not at all?
Not in the slightest.
I really don't know nothing about it. Never, seems okay to me. Like,
you know? Like, even watching the first trailer, I didn't agree with the critics when they said, oh, she never smiles, she never shows any...
Yeah, that was an eye-roll moment for me too.
And I was just like, you're looking for things to complain about in that franchise.
I'd agree with that. No, I'm interested to see the movie and make my own fucking mind up. I don't know her work that well. She seems fine to me.
Because, let's be honest, she's won an Academy Award for Best Actress.
Yeah. But did you see the movie? I sure didn't. Like, you know, I don't know her work that well. I know she's acclaimed. That's it.
But you don't win that award.
Yeah.
For no reason.
True. No, good point. Good point.
I mean, there haven't been that many...
I just hope that there's comedy. I hope she's got some comedy chops in her because she'll need them.
Even if she doesn't, I think it's the same way that Captain America
Chris Evans
doesn't hold a lot of comedy in his role.
Sure.
You bring that in with, like, the Falcon teaming up with him. Yeah, Nick Fury's working.
Yeah.
You bring in comedic actors through other ways.
Yeah. She's got to have something. For them to have picked her and, like, lock her in for 7 movies and, yeah, she's the, you know, the new linchpin player. Like, I mean, I agree with the theory. I'm fascinated to see this movie. I am very excited for the Captain Marvel
movie.
Absolutely.
So am I.
Yeah.
And we've got less than a month to wait.
That's good news. That's
like, it's coming up out of the... so quick.
I get a bit tired of these guys, dude, who are just, like, on and on about a lack of charisma. And it's like... what are you basing this on? Because I'm not seeing the problem. There's almost
if you're super worried about her charisma, go to YouTube and Google her on like a Letterman type show.
Yeah,
go and find a late night show where she's done an interview and she's done plenty.
Yeah,
she did a couple of really fun ones with the old host of the Late Late Show. Mm.
Who? Conan O'Brien.
Sorry.
Who was it? Conan O'Brien or
no Late Late Show.
I don't know. Who's... oh, I know the guy you mean. The British guy.
Scottish.
Yeah, yeah. Whatever. But I know the guy you mean. I don't know his
Ferguson.
Name.
Ferguson. Craig Ferguson. She did a couple of interviews with him. She's super fun. Like...
yeah, okay.
I don't think there's a problem with
I think this is, a question of a bit of misogyny mixed in with not being familiar with her work. Because she comes from an indie background. A lot of these guys making these comments haven't seen the movies that she's done. Like, they're just not familiar with the source material. She's done a lot of, like, frankly, movies I wouldn't watch. But that doesn't mean she can't act and can't play a fucking Marvel role.
No. I mean, people could have said exactly the same thing about Chadwick Boseman prior to Black Panther.
I've never even heard
of Chadwick hadn't heard of him, didn't know if he could be charismatic...
but you can say that about
anybody. He's
the
leading role.
The guy who played Falcon. Like, I'm not super familiar with his work. You know what I mean? Like, anyone you don't know, yes, there's potential. They might not work, but it's like...
yeah, but I suppose the difference is, like, with Anthony Mackie, he was never a solo film.
Sure.
Like, it was never the Falcon and you have a movie.
Sure. Yeah.
You can run him as a cameo-ish kind of side character, no problems.
Yeah.
Okay. And I think that's what they're kind of questioning here. But Marvel have done it in the past. I'm so unworried about anything Marvel does.
Oh, yeah, I'm not concerned.
Because let's be honest, their worst movies are still good.
Yeah.
They're not great. They're not carrier franchise.
I'd say their worst ones are, with decent cast, both Ant-Man movies for me are the least interesting. But they still work as movies. They're still very watchable.
They're still good.
Yeah. No, I'm not. I'm
so not worried about...
I brought up purely as a discussion point. Now, Millennium Films shelves Red Sonja at last due after the allegations continue against Bryan Singer.
Yeah.
So maybe a good move there for them to... instead of the defiant stance they took a couple of weeks ago, Stu.
I always thought it was an odd film to take up anyway.
Red Sonja, I mean, I think in the right hands it could be very interesting, but I just... I mean, the time... like, you need a female director on it. for starters, in today's climate. You need to get a female director of
I think there's a lot of pressure politically to have a female director.
Yeah, so that's what I'm saying.
I don't think you absolutely need one. I think you
could. I don't think you need one in that directors. A male director could do a decent job, but I think in the current climate, it is definitely very politically correct and maybe the right message to send out there as well. Brian Singer's not the answer.
Look, I just never got the thought that a Red Sonja movie was wanted.
Well, we'll see, Stu. I mean,
Red Sonja has always been a second-tier property in Conan.
Yeah,
why would you not have a successful Conan franchise before you had
Red Sonja? I think they were trying to hop on board the bandwagon of, like, strong female character after Wonder Woman. I think it was a classic case of Hollywood trying to rip off that concept.
Yeah, see, I feel like... Because The Rock played Conan most recently, didn't he?
Jason Momoa. In the Conan the Barbarian film from 6 or 7 years ago, Jason Momoa did
play him. Sorry, I'm thinking of Hercules. Yeah.
Momoa played him. Look, I actually enjoyed it, but it didn't do well at all.
No. See, I think you have one or two Conan films first, wouldn't you? Surely that makes more sense.
Yeah, well, I don't know if the rights are owned by different people. Red Sonja isn't owned by the company that owns it.
That's confusing and sad. It's, yeah,
okay. Well, Red Sonja was a different character completely that Robert E. Howard created in a short story. Roy Thomas, the comic book writer, created Red Sonja as a like in Conan's world. So Red Sonja was
technically it's a different Red Sonja, or is it the same Red Sonja?
I don't know. Like it's. It's different, but he took the name and put it in Conan the Barbarian. He took
the name and the look and the character.
Well, he wrote...
It's a different... Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, it's weird. Like,
yeah. So it's weird like things. He somehow got away with just outright plagiarism, and now...
No, he was writing Conan. He was writing Conan, and at the time, Marvel probably owned the property, but since what's happened is the Red Sonja trademark is owned by different people to the Conan trademark. Like, Conan properties worldwide that own Conan that just sold him to Marvel... Don't own Red Sonja. Red Sonja is held by entirely different people who hold the rights to the movies and stuff. It's a complicated procedure. Basically, the two are quite split. Okay, so Robert E. Howard's estate would still pocket from it, but the rights are owned by different people.
But did Robert E. Howard ever put Red Sonja in a Conan story?
No. Robert E. Howard created Red Sonja in a short story. He created a
completely separate character.
Yeah, similar concept.
Yeah.
Okay. It's interesting, but like Red Sonja is very, very heavily based on another Conan warrior woman character that I believe is in Conan and is heavily in the Conan comics. So she is now a character in Conan comics quite a lot through the 70s, 80s and 90s and stuff. But like, for example, even when Marvel bought the rights to Conan, they don't own the rights to Red Sonja. That's actually held by Dynamite Comics. And so it's a complicated arrangement, but basically I think it's been one of the stumbling blocks for Red Sonja in general. Like, anyway, Stu, I've got a movie review here, Overrun. I was recommended this zombie World War II movie where basically American Rangers on D-Day pilot into, you know, they sort of go ahead into Nazi territory and they run into basically zombies. I was given rave reviews. I watched it. I found it very run-of-the-mill. Have you seen this Overrun movie?
No, never heard of it.
To be honest, it was given reviews like this is really going to be this great horror movie, like great concept, like Army Rangers coming in on D-Day into Nazi territory and Nazi experiments creating zombies. I thought it was going to be so much better. And you know when you watch something that, you know, I was like, well, this is like a 5.5 out of 10. Like, why am I wasting my time? And poor Michelle, like, you know, half slept through it. We had some Star Wars news. Rian Johnson trilogy cancellation room was debunked by Rian Johnson himself on Twitter. People were saying that he's definitely out, it's definitely not happening, and he said, no, it's still happening, I'm still working on it. So, I mean, take that for what it's worth. Do you think we'll see a Rian Johnson movie inside the next 5 years? Star Wars?
I think there's a pretty good chance. I don't know whether we'll get a full trilogy.
No. That was one of the...
But I feel like he's definitely involved at some level. So I think we'll get at least one film.
Yeah.
I think we're far... Like, the next item we've got here, which is looking at Dan and Dave's...
Yes.
The showrunners from Game of Thrones. I think that trilogy...
Oh, that's happening.
Is definitely happening.
So this HBO producer was announced that Dan and Dave are doing a trilogy of Star Wars movies and might then come back to HBO for their controversial Confederate show, which they did announce... like last year, and then met some pushback because of it's like, what if the South won the war kind of thing, the Civil War. Whereas they got some pushback, but, you know, like Game of Thrones is, what, wrapping this year, isn't it? Final year?
This is the final season, yeah. And I mean, there's going to be, like they've already said, there's prequel shows spinning off and Game of Thrones won't die as a concept. Like, sure. This is the original.
The main big show will conclude.
But this is the final season of Game of Thrones.
And, dude, I'm looking so forward to what Benioff and Weiss do with this prequel stuff. Because, like, this, let's hope it's Old Republic. Like, dude, aren't you just ready for them to just take it on? I'm ready to take me on an adventure, guys.
Absolutely.
You know? Absolutely. Seriously. I'm getting fucking more into it, dude. Star Wars. You know what I mean? I'm starting to get more into it. We've done the comic this week, and I read that comic, and I was like, fucking bring on more Star Wars, you know?
Yeah.
I was getting excited. A little excited over
when
here.
When Star Wars is good, it's great.
It's great, yeah. And, dude, just think of those guys given so much freedom to move in, like, an Old Republic setting, you know?
Yeah.
There's, you know, give them the space.
It's so easy for them to fuck Star Wars up, though, and that's is why it? We've seen it.
Sure.
Like, it's so easy for them not to do Star Wars well. And when Star Wars is done badly, it's a bad movie. You look at episode one, that was Star Wars not done well.
Yeah, by the original creator.
Yeah. Like, it's very easy to fuck it up. But yeah. When Star Wars is done well, like what we read this week.
Yeah.
What we've seen in episode seven, where it was a little bit of retread, but.
Still good, though.
Good Star Wars, and it's phenomenally fun. Yeah.
Oh, dude, but I also think giving them the space, like not making it 5 years before New Hope, making it like a long time before.
Absolutely.
Birth of the first.
Let's go 100 years either side, minimum.
Definitely, yeah. 100%
agree. That's what I want to see. I don't care whether it's future, I don't care whether it's past.
Yeah, I don't care either.
I just don't want
this is 5 minutes after the Battle of Endor.
Yeah.
And, you know, this is the cousin of such and such.
I'm
like,
tired
that.
Of seeing. I wouldn't mind the same species if they want to throw, like, the same races of creatures in there. That'd
That's
be
fine.
Cool.
Yeah.
But I don't want to see a character that I already know the name of unless it's.
Yeah.
Young Yoda or someone that's lived for 1,000 years.
I don't care if they pull up someone from the fucking comics that we've never heard of and do
Absolutely
their own spin.
Absolutely not.
That's fine.
Absolutely. I just want to be in that universe and have a fun story.
Yeah. Totally, dude. Totally, man. Now, there was... Oh, we already had this. Like, what has happened here? I've somehow managed to, like... I flicked back on news that I'd missed. I don't know if you tamper with the news, Stuart.
No, I was watching you do this. And all the news we got for the last, like, 20 minutes is at the top of the show.
Okay, all right.
Dave just jumped to The Irishman at one point because he was desperate to talk about The Irishman.
I got excited. Batman and the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles meet in their first animated movie crossover. I'm so fucking pumped for this, dude. Basically, Warner Brothers Animation and Warner Brothers Home Entertainment are teaming up with DC Entertainment and Nickelodeon for Batman versus the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. An all-new animated movie that unites everyone's favourite turtles with a Caped Crusader for the first time outside the comic page. It's based on the Batman Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles comics miniseries by James Tynion IV and Freddie Williams II. The film will see the turtles meeting Batman and feature our heroes teaming up to face Batman's deadly rogues gallery.
To clear things up, it's outside of comic books. Dave did just read the copy and paste a bit wrong.
What do you mean?
You just said it was a movie and then it was in comic books.
No,
not in comic books.
Wrong.
Outside of the page.
Dude, that's not what I said.
No, it's what you said. No. It's not what you've written down.
For the first time outside of the comics page.
No. You said inside when you read it. It is outside.
I'm going to review the tapes. When I edit this show, I'm going to review the tapes and I'll replay what I said.
How about you stop copy and pasting and actually write something for yourself?
No. The point of the story is not how I read it. It's I'm so excited for this animated movie. I mean, what about you, Stu? Could they do it in the Batman animated series style, do you think?
I don't know if the turtles fit in that style, do they?
Well, they recently did it. They recently did another spin-off series after this, James Tynion IV, which had the animated series Batman and the 80s Turtles. And the 80s Turtles. Can you imagine how fucking cool that would be? So the 80s Turtles.
I like both those properties. I don't know how they cross over, though.
Well, yeah, I guess you get rid of the comic book and find out.
That's what I'm kind of struggling to see. Because Batman works really well with someone that's more comedic than him.
Sure.
Where he can play the straight man. I think that works really well.
But that's the turtles.
But it's not all the turtles.
Well, everyone except Raphael. Like, Michelangelo is the strongest comedic. Like,
What?
Michelangelo
is. He's got them backwards.
Raphael is the serious, like,
Donatello's
crazy turtle.
The serious one.
Donatello is the tech head. Leonardo is
the
like.
The serious one. No. Leo, the leader.
Leo's
the
leader.
The most grounded character.
Leo the leader, yes, and serious. Donatello's the geek. Michelangelo's the fun-loving, pizza-loving dude. And Raphael's like the angry, rebellious one. That's the turtles.
Yeah.
Well, what are you saying I got wrong? I just said Raphael is the crazy fucking one. Michelangelo is the...
You said Leo was the crazy
one. You're not hearing me. I said Michelangelo. I actually
what
said
are you
it.
On? Are you still drunk from that night on Friday?
Dude, you are not listening to what I'm saying. Michelangelo is the fun-loving, pizza-loving, cowabunga turtle. Leo is the serious slash almost boring at times, depending on how they write him. One Raphael is the angry one. He's the one who's the angriest.
So two out of four of those work with Batman.
Okay, but if you watch the 80s show, because in the 80s show they're all pretty comedic, even Raphael. Like, that's what I'm saying. It depends on what take. You know, in the 80s show they're all pretty comedic. Like Raphael
I don't see the four of them teaming up with Batman and...
Well, it's happened.
Working in Batman's universe. But I think you need to change quite a bit.
But, dude, it's happened. That's what I'm saying. It's already happened in the comic books. That's what they're adapting. So I guess if you're looking to see how they did it, you can go read the comic. I've read it. It was okay. It wasn't great.
That's what I mean. Like, you're giving reviews of, it didn't really work. No, I'm that's what I'm saying.
No, I think they need...
I don't think it really works.
I think they need to do it a bit better.
The comic, and the review is it doesn't really work.
Well, I wasn't a massive fan of the art style. I thought the story was okay. It's all right. Like, it was a 6.5 out of 10. You could do it a lot better. But you could do it a lot better, though.
That's very mediocre.
Dude, you could do it a lot better. I don't think this is the only attempt they're ever going to... But they've already since then done one as the animated series Batman Meeting the 80s Turtles, which I haven't read, but that was the most recent depiction they did. They did, of this James Tynion the Fourth, they've done at least two series. I haven't read the second series, but they've done at least two crossovers inside the last two or three years. I've only read the first one, and I haven't read the... I thought the animated series Batman Meeting the Turtles, 80s Turtles, was actually more interesting. I think that could be really cool. If you did it as an animated movie, if you could use the actual styles, I think it would be kind of visually cool as well. Anyway, so what are you saying, Stu? You're not going to watch it? You seem to have an attitude about it.
More towards your inability to read English.
Are you going
to... That you have copy and pasted.
Whatever, dude.
You keep claiming that you're this amazing writer, yet you write fuck all when we do these shows.
I do a lot, man. Josh Brolin is reportedly in talks to play Gurney Halleck, the war master for the Atreides family and a mentor-like character for the young lead Paul Atreides in Denis Villeneuve's Dune adaptation, Legendary Pictures. This is just getting more and more stars. It actually also has Jason Momoa linked as well, playing Duncan Idaho. I don't know if you're familiar with the story of Dune, Stu. You'd love Dune, dude, I reckon. Have you read the Dune books?
No, I haven't.
I reckon they're so far up your alley, it's not funny. I read all of them as a teenager. Set in the distant future, the story follows Paul Atreides, whose noble family accepts control of the desert planet Arrakis. As the only planet capable of producing the highly valuable resource known as the Spice Melange, which allows for space travel, control of Arrakis is highly contested amongst the noble families. When the Atreides are betrayed, Paul leads a rebellion to restore his family's control. That is such a sort of like short version of what's actually going on in this comic. This storyline, it's amazing.
Do you know what I would love to do one week?
What?
2 minutes before the show, just redact everything that's copy and pasted.
Why?
Just watch how much you fucking struggle.
Well, dude, I do the show news, so don't do that because this is the news. Look, I'm telling you, man, like, I'm amazed you haven't read Dune, dude, because I think you would really, really enjoy it. It's a massively interesting series, very complex as it goes on, but the first book is probably... first book is probably the best of the series. It sort of gets very... The last few volumes are quite weak, but the first three or four volumes in this Dune series are highly, highly, highly readable stuff. Have you seen the amount of names, though, Stu, that are coming on to Dune?
I know. It's got a great cast.
It's got a massive cast. And then we had this news, and this actually... I've heard multiple people over the last few days mentioning this. The Yesterday trailer imagines a world where the Beatles never existed, Stu. Danny Boyle's new movie. And basically this one guy remembers the Beatles and starts releasing the songs that the Beatles did. And it's a world where everyone basically woke up and forgot the Beatles. Interesting concept for a movie.
Yeah.
I've had multiple people this week mentioning it to me. Different people. Like, people are just catching on to this concept, thinking how fucking amazing is it. I think it's funny. Danny Boyle needs a hit. I mean, this is the guy that was going to direct the new James Bond. He pulled out, if you recall. And Transporting 2 didn't hit. So, offbeat comedy.
It's a bit of a weird concept, but okay.
Yeah, it's up there. So, look, this is some news from Dark Horse. They re-established Star Wars connection for the new Rebels book. As we know, Dark Horse did the Star Wars comics for since the 90s until Marvel bought the license back when, when Disney acquired Lucasfilm. Basically, though, it's just a thing called The Art of Star Wars Rebels, an incredible hardcover amassing art and creative commentary chronicling four seasons of adventure in a galaxy far, far away. I mean, are you a fan of Rebels, Clone Wars, Stu? Have you watched any of this?
I watched a bit of Rebels and, I watched all of it, actually. So,
cool. Pick this one like Christmas, Stu? Sounds like a pretty, good coffee table book kind of thing. You know what I mean?
I don't know. I've never been into buying books that are just artwork. No.
True. Just, like, yeah, I hear you. You like a bit of content sort of thing.
I'd much
prefer. I thought if you were just getting in with, I'm not into buying books. I was like, well, this show's struggling. Like,
in fact, the way I started the show is the complete opposite of that. So, no, it's buying like coffee table books have never really interested me. I'd rather just buy the actual content.
I'd like them if I was in a massive, like what I would like to be living in, like a huge mansion, like almost like a pyramid structure. And then I would have like on one level some coffee book tables, some coffee, tables and some books laid through there. But it would mostly be to show off.
I think that's 90% of the decisions you make.
mostly just to, not even impress, but just to show off, basically. I just like, check this out.
Yeah,
like,
that tracks.
Throw that book out on the table and go, look at that kid. Well, no, you can't touch it.
Jesus, you're fucked up.
Stu, there's no need for that.
Far out.
Stu, I'm in a good mood today. I'm sitting in the throne and got the feet up. I mean, you're getting sick of me in the throne, aren't you? I'm a little too comfortable in the throne. You've done 100, probably, or almost 100 episodes sitting in this throne. Now, I'm in here, feet are up, like, got the cushion out. I'm missing the Burger King crown, the Jughead crown. That's the only thing I'm missing now.
Tell you what, next week I'm definitely doing the redacted anything that's copy pasted.
That's how we do the news.
Copyright allegation. I'm just going to, wipe it.
Well, as long as you replace it with what the news is, so we know. Otherwise, we won't know the news. You can just do the, what I often do, I don't always copy paste, what I often do is I just do the one line headline. That's often what I do.
Which you copy paste.
Yeah, but even still, but you need to have something so we know what the news is. So feel free to do it if you want, but you need to have something with the news. Like, for example, the next news item, McFarlane Toys picks up the DC comic book toys license for 6 to 12-inch figures from 2020. This is actually quite big news. McFarlane Toys have been behind some excellent toys in their time.
And this is a massive contract.
Yeah. I mean, Tom McFarlane knows how to make money, doesn't he?
Yeah.
I'm actually very positively inclined towards this. I think this is actually a real sort of turning point. Because the problem is, for me, I'm no longer into buying the little toys. For me, it's like, if I'm going to bother buying, it's a statue. Whereas I think Tom McFarlane toys, if he gives you the right price, say if you're spending about $100 US, and you get something amazing for that, Depends what the price points are.
Of course, it always does.
Yeah, but right now...
You're saying that, Dave. That's a non-point if ever I've heard.
It's not a non-point.
Things is great if it's for the right price.
Yeah, but for the right quality. Like, I'm hoping...
Fortune cookie, Dave.
I'm hoping that he ups the quality on, like, if he's doing action figures, that he ups the quality, like, significantly. Because I don't feel the quality is there on your generic action figures anymore. I don't collect them at all. I've sort of, like, my tastes have shifted. I'm sort of like, impress me, Todd, give me some fucking options here. Give me some room to move. Jesus Christ. Like, it's my one-man fucking show over here. Now,
you're struggling with the one-man
show. No, I'm not struggling. Now. It's a show. It's has a co-host. It's
the disjointed reading of copy and pasted, which you just...
There's a co-host.
Ignore punctuation. Just completely ignore it. Doesn't exist.
Oh, well, I'll try to get...
Let's string these words together any way we can.
Okay,
and then it's...
Okay.
Flicking from that to just Confucius say and coming out with the most generic...
I tell you what I haven't seen so far in episode 101 is a single news item from Jimmy Olsen. Like, nothing at all. I thought with all the fucking... Stu's been over the whole show. You've been on your laptop. Like, I don't know if you're checking your fucking assets and, like, balance sheet over there, Stu. But, like, the whole show I thought Stu was adding to the news. Turns out, no, there's no news at all that Jimmy Olsen has brought in.
No, I didn't know.
Terrible. Okay, well, luckily, we're coming up to one of the final news items. This is actually a bit of a personal piece from me. Tomorrow's publisher, Stu, I was listening to Word Balloon, and they had the guy on who did the comic book history of the 90s, comic book, American Comic Book Chronicles, it's called. He did a history of the 90s. It was a fascinating interview, and he was talking about the Tomorrow's publisher. Well, I went to their website, picked up the digital copies of the 90s and 80s comic histories. There's also like 70s, 40s, 60s, and some of the decades are broken up into multiple parts. You know, like the 40s is in two parts, books, 60s two-part books. I'm reading the 80s one, man, and it's so fascinating. It goes year by year. It really breaks it down in incredible detail. I just really want to recommend these books. I've spoken to a few people on Signal of Doom, listeners like Raid and a few others, like Anthony Computer Crouch, and said just how much interesting information is included. Like, I'm only like a third of the way through the 80s book, and it's compulsively readable, Stu. Mm. You'd probably enjoy it, man.
Yeah, absolutely, I would. Mm.
So you can get the paper version, the hardcover version, but I think the 80s one had been sold out, so I just picked up a digital copy. But one insight I gathered, Stu, I gleaned, the newsstand was failing the industry as it moved into the 1980s because lower profit margin on comic books compared to magazines, etc., for the wholesalers, they weren't actually offered getting to the newsstands themselves because the profits weren't there. It's just a really interesting insight into how we're always, like, trying to solve the fucking problems of the comic book industry. And, like, I remember as a kid, newsagents still carried a lot of comics, but that was the dying days. Like, this was around 85, 86. My memory is sliding into 87, and then it kind of stopped. You know, it's just interesting. Like, and I just really recommend readers probably...
I mean, it makes sense, because basically what it's saying is the price point for a comic book shouldn't really change too much. Where the quality that Marvel and DC and the other big publications want to put out, they're spending too much money to get there.
Mm.
You look at something like the manga that we get, all black and white, they can produce a lot of it for a brilliant price point, and it sells hundreds of times more than Western comic books.
Yeah.
I think a lot of these publishers need to kind of look at whether they value the quality of the stories and then they get that out to a bigger audience, or whether they're truly invested in how well it looks, the quality of publication, like the printing quality, whether it's worth spending a lot of money on these artists and showing off their work to the full capabilities and getting to a small audience, whether they're better off going broader or whether it's a mixed strategy. Do some, have it split.
Yeah. I always think gimmick strategy is best. Like, I remember, like, early 80s into mid-80s, that the quality of the DC and Marvel books was terrible. Like, the paper quality?
Yeah.
Like, it was terrible. Like, you'd look at it and think, even as a kid, you were like, man, this colorization sucks. And then almost overnight, it just radically improved.
Yeah.
And, of course, that was a massive shift in the industry. And, as you say, like, costs increased.
It was. And ultimately, it was to show off the quality of the artists that they've employed over the years. Like, they've got some tremendous talent there that do a lot of amazing work, and then the printing comes out and it's so low quality that they're putting in bare minimum efforts to make up.
And that would be terrible. I mean, I think,
and that's really hard. Like, if you're struggling and making a lot of great art, but then it's getting printed on the terrible quality.
Which it was well into the 80s, you know?
Yeah, like, it's a massive blow to the gut.
I think DC, they started doing the prestige, like Dark Knight Returns, and that came out in like a prestige font with high quality production and all that.
Yeah.
And then gradually the whole industry caught up, but it took a couple of years.
I mean, I almost want to see them do, you go to like the more manga-centric model, which is your black and whites that come out every week, way cheaper, price point drops by a lot.
Yeah.
But then they employ these artists to take the best runs, like the most popular runs, go back and do them to that level of quality.
Gotcha.
Like, if a run sells amazingly well.
Yeah.
Like a current run. So you look at, like, your Batman's always going to get a color release, you know?
Sure, yeah.
And your Spider-Man's always going to get a color release. But if a series does really well, wins awards or sells amazingly, you just re-release it with an artist attached that does amazing work.
I mean, yeah, but I, like, will say this. I grew up on 2000 AD comics. 2000 AD, back in the day, was all black and white except the two central pages, yeah? It changed as the years went by, but, like, for years. Like, Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles was black and white. Like, Savage Sword of Conan, black and white. I quite like black and white comics, I'll be honest. I grew up where that was not that abnormal. But like, the main industry, of course, was colour when I was growing up. I just happened to be reading black and white. Where are you on black and white, Stu? Like, how, is there an accessibility problem for you as a reader, as a younger reader?
I think it depends on the artist, honestly. Because you can get away with black and white looking incredibly good if you've got a talented artist on board. I think they suffer when you try to cram in too much detail into a single panel.
Sure.
So the trade that we read this week, like, that Avengers run.
Sure.
If that was done in black and white with the same artwork, yeah, I think we would have struggled massively.
Would have struggled to know who was who.
Because they put in so much detail into those panels, which you can get away with when it's coloured because you can differentiate.
Yeah.
That would have really struggled as black and white.
That's a good point. That's a very good point.
So they need to change their style. But, yeah, if you get the right artist, it's great.
Yeah, I agree. Now, look, we've finally come out to my final piece of news here. Now, Stu, this is something that made me laugh. So Savage Avengers is coming out. Last year, Marvel reacquired the license to Conan Barbarian. But Conan's reign at Marvel won't be limited to just his own titles. EW can exclusively reveal the character will be a key member...
You just read out EW can exclusively
reveal. This is EW. I'm going from their side.
Well, the level of journalism is plummeted.
The character... Listen to what I'm saying.
Plummeted.
Conan will be a key member of the new Savage Avengers series, fighting evil alongside classic Marvel superheroes. Get ready for its due. Wolverine. Brown and tan costume Wolverine. Venom. Punisher. Elektra. And Brother Voodoo. This is an unsanctioned team of heroes, says Jerry Duggan, who'll be writing both Savage Avengers and Savage Sword of Conan, which we did this week. It has to be something that visually makes sense to you, and I think it does. Mike Diodato Jr., an artist I'd like a lot, is illustrating this book in both worlds. We envisioned a threat, a magical green zone where the evil wizard of Conan's world trading spells with the hand of Japan. Conan is on a very Conan-like mission. He's heard the tale of an amulet, so he's chasing it, and the evil magic sorcerer is doing something that would be a Marvel Avengers problem. It feels like we have found some very fertile ground that is a Venn diagram between these two worlds. I mean, yeah, I'm, you know, for, he goes on further to say Savage Avengers might as well be called Stabby Avengers. I'm super excited, but I'm also sort of like, there's a lot of trepidation amongst Conan fans that are very happy with what Marvel are doing on the main titles, but they're sort of worried about, even Jimmy King's comics was sort of saying, like, Conan's not a team player. Bringing Conan to Marvel Universe can really dilute the Conan brand. Like, bringing him into the mainstream Marvel Universe. Like, we don't know exactly how it's all going to play out, but what's your reaction? So you're like, this was big news. It broke only, you know, a couple of days ago. And it certainly resounded around the internet. Like, plenty of people talk about it.
It sounds terrible. It sounds goddamn awful. I mean, all of these characters are famously not team players. Wolverine is on plenty of teams, sure, but he's not a team player.
Yeah.
The rest are all famously not team players. So putting them together is going to be...
Hell on earth.
Well, which character you play... Like, you can't have them all play the same role.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Like, they've got different power sets, fine. In a battle, you've got a diverse set of power sets, not a problem. That's going to be fun to read.
Yeah, they're a pretty combustible team, is what
but
you're trying to say.
When you want to have a team, you've always got to have the one character that really doesn't want to be there and plays the outside... It's totally cool on the mission, doesn't want to beat, hates it.
Yeah.
Tolerates the other team members. You can get some comedy out of that.
Sure.
You can't run a 6-7 member team where they're all that person.
Sounds
like one issue where they're forced to play together and then that's it.
Well, yeah, I mean, if you said to me this was a one and done,
I'd be interested.
I mean, dude, we'll check it out on the show. I mean, I'm interested. Jerry Duggan has very rarely let me down, but it is. It does feel like
Marvel's take on Wolverine currently is not good.
It's been terrible.
Venom goes up and down, has good patches, but it's a meh for me.
What do you think about Jerry Duggan on
the
title?
I'm not a fan of Punisher. I'm not a huge fan of Elektra. Brother Voodoo is, again, the third string wizard.
No one cares about Brother Voodoo. Agree on that topic. In fact, I didn't even know who it was. I saw some black guy just standing there. I'm like, who is this guy?
He was Sorcerer's Brand for a very brief moment.
Yeah, I know, but that wasn't a great moment.
No, it wasn't. They quickly reinstalled Stephen Strange. It's a character of I don't care list. Like, I'm reading this and I'm like, I don't care about any of these characters other than Wolverine.
Sure.
And the track record on Wolverine isn't great at the
moment. What do you think about the Mike Diodato Jr. on art and Jerry Duggan writing? Like, it's a strong creative.
Both those names are fantastic. If you put them on another title, I'd be very happy to read that.
Well,
but you throw it on this Savage Avengers and I'm thinking this is them. It feels more like a cash grab with the new, shiny new Conan property that they've got.
Yeah.
Reintroducing Wolverine, putting him in every title they can.
Yeah.
This doesn't appeal to me at all.
Look, we'll cover the first issue on the show, and I think just out of interest, really, I'm obviously going to be more closely invested, and I will report back on how it goes. But I think Stu's concerns are noted, as are Jim's and King's comics. I have my own concerns on this topic too, frankly. you know, I think a lot of what Stu has just said, even just in terms of the personality of the team members, like...
That's what I mean. Like, you know, you've got so many similar characters there.
Yeah, agreed.
That putting them in a team doesn't work as a team dynamic. You've always got to have a differential point of... Like, you look at the Fantastic Four, you look at the X-Men, you've got to have someone that's a little colder, that leads the team, holds them together. You've got to have the wild card. You've got to have the... Like, there's a certain amount of retreading old ground that's necessary when you're forming teams.
Mm.
And you have that on every team.
This is like a band of complete rebels put together.
But this is the same character. These are all people that play the same role in a team.
Oh, they're not the same character, but I agree. They're cut from the same
cloth. You put Wolverine on a team of X-Men,
yeah,
and he's the guy that's like, do I have to follow your rules?
Yeah.
Why don't we just kill the guy and get it over with?
Especially classic Wolverine.
Let's just kill him and go home, you know?
Yeah.
We'll save the day, fine. Like, I'll tolerate doing a mission.
Mm.
But my way of doing it is kill the guy and go home.
Well, Wolverine at his peak in X-Men was exactly that reluctant member.
Exactly right. You know? And he's always the last person to join the team in the X-Men.
Yeah.
Same in the movies. But now you're teaming up with Punisher, who famously does exactly the same thing.
Sure.
When in a team, it's, do I have to? Fine, but we'll just kill him, go
home. Yeah, I'd say Punisher is even further away from wanting to be
Conan's
in a team.
Conan's exactly the same.
Conan's a complete player, solo guy.
Doesn't want to be in a team, but if he has to, fine, but we'll kill him and go home.
Hmm.
Like, you're teaming up the same dynamic over and over again.
I agree. That's kind of why I brought it up. I want to get your take. Final news, Stu. This is something I wanted to sort of speak to you about. And DC obviously had the Vertigo title that was releasing a stack of books, one of which was Second Coming, which is basically kind of the return of Christ and he's as a superhero, basically. That's the basic pitch.
Okay.
So that was the basic pitch. Now, Mark Russell... had it approved. There was pushback from some conservative groups in the States. They're no longer continuing with the book. The rights have reverted to Russell, who's now shopping into interested publishers.
I really hope no one's interested.
Well, plenty of people are interested. Like, and I mean, this is the thing. I mean, what's your concern? Is it just like the concern of... My concern was that DC greenlit a title that was very likely to be slightly controversial. Of course, you're dealing with
slightly controversial.
Or controversial, like whatever.
It is massively controversial.
Okay, but that's not a bad thing. To be controversial isn't a bad thing in itself. And then they've pulled the title.
No, but so not expected. Only is it controversial, but it's a terrible fucking idea. Like, concept-wise, it doesn't work.
Well,
I'm sorry, read the tagline that you've copy and pasted. The world's favourite saviour? Really?
Well, I don't know. Like, you know, but anyway, it got pushback from Christian groups, Stu. In the States, calling it blasphemous. And
exactly
then,
right. Like, there is no group that loves this concept.
Yeah.
Like, let's be honest. If you're Christian and you pray to Jesus, this is terrible. Turning him into a superhero, it almost makes fun of your religion. If you're any other religion, then why do you want to read a book about the superhero of another... Like, that's a bad choice.
There was a recent book called Punk Rock Jesus where...
Oh, God, that sounds terrible.
Well, it was an interesting book. It got a lot of acclaim. Like, we're basically a clone based on... They had something of Jesus. You know, I don't know what the context was, but they got something to clone Jesus. And they brought Jesus back, and it was Jesus, but he was very much looking at the world around him and commenting on it, and he was like a punk rock version. He was like, we've completely gone off the path, you know, so far.
It sounds terrible.
I don't mind that... I'm not religious, but I dislike that DC greenlit something that was so clearly going to cause controversy, and the second it does, they cancel it. Like, it's like, what are you doing? You didn't see this as being... Like, from the very pitch, as you described, I agree. It's straight away, you know you're going to get red flags. But that said, having a bit of controversy isn't a bad thing in comics. Like, this has now got...
Like, having a bit of controversy is good. Like, it sells.
Yeah.
But when you've got the kind of controversy where there is no demographic that will want to read your book...
Yeah.
That's not...
Well, apparently a lot of publishers are looking to pick it up. Like, thankfully, I'm coming from the creative side here. Like, I'm not religious, so I'm an atheist, so, you know, I am what I am. But he's now, at least he's given the rights to his book back, and he's now shopping into Image and several others. So I'm sort of more on the side of, like, I don't see where you green light a title, and then the very first pushback, this is what DC did on Batman Damned. You know, it's like, oh, my God, we've, like, you know, they've now pushed Batman Damned and all the Black Label books right off the list when they fired those guys recently, a couple of weeks ago. Like, to me, there's a certain level of, like, are they not looking 10 minutes down the road? You know, like, into the very near future and the very likelihood that Christian groups in the States are going to protest this book. That's clear.
No, of course they're not. DC's quite happy doing this.
Why, though? What
their name is still in the press. First they greenlight it, their name is in the press.
Yeah.
Then there's controversy, their name is in the press. Then they cancel it, their name is in the press.
But they don't get anything out of that, though.
What do you mean? They've just got so much free publicity.
But to me, if you kept the book going...
You get DC in the media week after week after week.
Okay.
DC profit from this massively.
To me, I would have
put the writers, the creators, they don't get anything from it.
Mm.
They're chewed up and spat out.
Yeah.
Like, it's not good for anyone that's creative in any way, but... Yeah,
to me, it's just very disappointing from DC. I find it a disappointing decision. Like, I hear your point, but to me, that's just...
Okay, DC's, like, brilliant.
Yeah.
If you want to have an opinion on us, fantastic, voice it. Voice it as loud as you can to as many people as you can, but make sure you spell us right.
Well, okay.
Like, that's their take on everything now.
All right. Well, but what about their Black Label books, where they put out all this publicity,
yeah,
and then they've just pulled them all very quietly... Like, where is the direction? That's what I'm asking you. Forget about, like, the perception. Where is the direction internally? Like, you announce all these books, you get Rucky, you get all these people, you get Callisto DeConnick, you get big names, Batman Damned Azzarello. Like, it's all... It's a big project, and now it's gone totally quiet and dead, and all the release dates have either not been announced or have been pushed way into the future.
See, the What's big difference on? Here is with the Damned line, it was never meant to be as controversial as it ended up being.
Sure.
Like, it was meant to be a darker take, which isn't controversial.
No.
When it got announced, people went, sounds great.
Mm.
There wasn't a massive pushback saying...
It was just Batdick that, like...
And then the first issue came out, and all of a sudden there was massive pushback.
Yeah.
And controversy, and they went, we didn't plan for controversy. We didn't want any of this. We're going to have to call it.
I find that really interesting.
Because that hurts their brand.
Yeah, but did
they can flirt with controversy and announce that they're going to do it and they won't do it and they will and they won't.
Mm.
Keep going back and forth. Mm. Their name's in the press the whole time. Meanwhile, they're not actually releasing anything controversial.
Mm.
And their name is attached to a product that's still good.
What was so bad about Batman and Damned, though? Like, why? What was so bad? Like, other than we saw Batdick, like, I don't remember anything other being at all controversial in the whole comic. It was all just a darker take on Batman with John Constantine. That was about it. I feel like we've seen a darker take on Batman done about 2,000 times.
Yeah.
I don't know. It puzzles me as a publisher that at the moment they seem very sort of... we've got more news, actually, that there was rumours that they're going down to 22 copies a month, 22 issues a month, and Dan DiDio pushed back on it. But there just feels like there's a sense of indecision in the air at DC Comics, just even in what we're covering, that's making the news cycle. It's very much like, we're behind Black Label. We don't want anything to do with Black Label. We're going down to 22 titles from wherever they are now, probably in the 40s somewhere. And, you know, there's a lot of back and forth. We're going heavy into Walmart. We're not going heavy into Walmart. Oh, yes, we are. Like... Do you feel that there's a transitional phase going on?
Yeah, but I feel like that's across the board. I don't think it's just a DC thing.
Mm-hmm.
I think a lot of these companies are trying to figure out what's happening to the industry going forward. Because the industry was on the brink of death.
Sure.
Everyone brought it back. Like, we didn't lose that many creative houses when everybody kind of went through that phase.
Sure.
But now we've seen this massive boom in the movies. The popularity of the characters and the IPs has shot up.
Mm-hmm.
Yet the comic book industry seems to be unable to capitalize on this.
It's in the doldrums sales-wise.
Exactly. Yeah.
Mm.
So I think they're all looking for what is the next model, what is the next way to actually get some dollars back in the bank accounts and have the next generation of comic books come out.
I'm just yeah, yes, agreed. I'm just disappointed they didn't proceed with their Black Label books, which were kind of like, all they were just getting, like, paying, you know, very acknowledged creators, decent coin, and getting some prestige books out there. I think that's a good solution.
Yeah, like, I don't know if it's a long-term one, but it's a decent short-term kind of gimmick.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I mean, it could have been some good books, and you get some nice collections out there, could put them in bookstores, you know, like a bit of a higher tier level.
See, I don't think
you
could put them in bookstores. I think that's one of the issues they had.
But of course they would be. Just like in Kinokuniya, for example, a bookstore, you would have all the trades. Of course they would wind up in bookstores. Like,
you remember these you had to show ID to buy them. Like, you couldn't.
Black Label?
No, like, you didn't. Batman Damned?
Until that Batgirl came out, you certainly didn't need to. It was
no, but I'm talking about like Batman Dam. Like you couldn't walk in as a 12-year-old and buy that.
Okay, but every other one of their books, like the Kelly Sue DeConnick Aquaman, the Rucka one, like they weren't 18 plus. They called Black Label, but that was just the moniker over it. They're not actually 18 plus books. Batman Damned, I think, was just one that got past the censors at DC. Like, I think that was a completely surprise. I think that was just one of those occasions where it got past the printer and got past the editor or whoever. Like, I think that was a genuine mistake. I don't know if there was more theories that it was more a conspiracy, but I actually do think that just got past their internal editing. I really do believe that. And it became a controversy that they sort of were like, what do we do with this? And I'm surprised they just didn't do what most comic book stores do and comic book companies just double down on it. Like, that's the normal course of action. It's very... But right now, they're very reactive, and I'm sensing indecision, you know? Like, it's very, like, we're not quite sure what we want.
Kind of, they were very aware at the time that they're almost on thin ice in every sense. Like, the...
Sure.
This was pre-Aquaman, so the movies weren't going well.
Gotcha.
The comics weren't selling well. Like, they were on... There was no front where they went, we've got an absolute lock moving forward. I hear.
Negative perception.
Yeah, they're really struggling.
Yeah, okay.
Like, Marvel, the sales are down in comic books. It's not looking good comic book-wise, but they had this absolute lock in the movies. Like, they knew that, like, Avengers Endgame and Avengers Infinity War were coming out. Like, not a problem in the world.
Yeah, look, I agree. No, it's interesting times. We'll keep on it because, I'm fascinated to see what happens. Now, it's Weekly Comics, Drew. We've got three comics this week. Wonder Twins 1. This was a choice of mine. Came out from DC. Obviously, the Wonder Twins famous from the Super Friends TV show of the 80s.
Yeah.
I found this... It was comedic. I found this quirky and enjoyable. I gave it 7.5 out of 10. I mean, it's very slight, but I found it amusing. What did you think, Stu?
I really enjoyed this one.
Yeah.
It was absolute comedy. The way they paired them up with Batman, I thought yeah. was great.
Yeah, yeah. He really was Bat-jerk, wasn't he? You know, like it was just a funny, like, sort of slice of life almost inside the Justice League through the eyes of these Wonder Twins.
Yeah.
The disappointment of Batman and Wonder Woman to their powers was kind of amusing.
Yeah, yeah. Shape changes. Like, oh, that's useful. Winter water.
Oh. Yeah. She can turn into animals, he can turn into water. And having watched many episodes of the Super Friends in the 80s, they were so lame, those two. That really
But even lame. That, like, the little two panels they had where they were explaining about the concept of the Hall of Justice.
Mm.
Being a, like, coordinated centre.
Yeah.
So you wouldn't get every hero showing up to the same crime.
Yeah.
And you had, like, one, like, burglar walking out of a jewellery store. And he's just like, really? Well, like, the entire Justice League was surrounding him.
I love that.
Or the other one where they had, what's the electricity guy? I
can't Black remember. Lightning?
Black Lightning, yeah. They had Black Lightning showing up to, like, the Kraken attacking boats in the harbour. And he's like, I can't... What? Call Aquaman. What am I doing here?
I had, like, the supercomputer when Superman's like, this was once the nerve center. And it's like their 80s computer or 70s.
I thought the comedy was actually really well done.
Yeah, I thought so too.
And the supercomputer's just inability to do anything other than... Like, playback a recording or
music.
Get music. I thought it was fantastic.
Yeah, look, as a Super Friends fan from way back, I actually enjoyed this. I gave it 7.5 out of 10. What did you give it, Stu?
I gave it an 8.5. I thought this was really fun.
It's good. Next up, we had Savage Sword of Conan, which is Jerry Duggan on writing duties, Ron Garney on art, fabulous artist. So this is the second of the mainstream Conan titles coming out. I love this one, Stu. Like, interesting stuff in it. That map that activated his third eye. You know, kind of, and just the art in general by Ron Garney, who I love as an artist. I am hooked on this title. What about you, Stu? I know that obviously you're always on the fence with Conan, but you've enjoyed Conan the Barbarian through Aaron. How did you think of Jerry Duggan's take on of Conan here?
This was terrible compared to the other run of Conan.
Didn't like this one?
No, not in any way. This was really poor.
This was much more, how can I say, kind of hack slash, almost generic style Conan.
It's a far worse take on Conan, where he's just... The problem I have with this character is that they write him similar to the Hulk.
Right.
But they want you to feel something for him. He's a character that literally just, like, hits something, crush something. If I can't do that, I give up.
So you thought it was... I mean, I think it was probably a lesser version of Conan compared to...
The story really wasn't. Aaron's. Like, that. The part where his third eye opened...
I liked that part.
That was the worst part of the comic.
Oh, see, that was my favourite part of the comic. Up until then, I wasn't super on board other than for the art. But I'll tell you something interesting about this title that got picked up on the Conan page. One of the pirates has, like, a flintlock pistol. And which is the first time that pistols have ever been shown. And I don't know if it got past the editors or if Marvel even care or know about this. But, like, pistols and gunpowder are not part of Conan's world. And it got picked up on the Conan pages. And a lot of people were getting pretty irate, including Chuck Dixon. He wasn't super irate, but he was more like, really seriously. Like, yeah, it was interesting. Like, that was something that I didn't expect and didn't see. Someone actually circled in on it. One of the commentators just circled in on it. Goes, really, we've got pistols now in Conan? And to me, that's a step too far. Inside the normal Conan medieval world.
This didn't tick any boxes for me at all. Okay. Like, it wasn't...
Yeah, fair enough.
Concept-wise, it wasn't good. I don't know. It picked up in a weird place. Well,
let's hope this isn't the episode Jerry Duggan listens to, because I'm close to getting him on the show. He's just following me back on Twitter. I have a good relationship with Jerry Duggan, just in terms of chatting to him on Twitter.
His work in general is top show.
Overall, he's very strong.
Admittedly, I'm not a Conan fan, but I felt
Jason
Aaron's run on Conan is
strong.
A superior run to what I've seen here.
Sure. Okay.
I like that a lot more, and I'm still not a huge fan, but... I like that a lot more.
Yeah. I mean, I'm giving this a 7 out of 10, and I think there's room to improve. And I think some of your criticisms are noted and quite valid. Where are you, Stu, on this one?
I had it at 5.
Yeah. You know what? That's one of the reasons we have you on the show, Stu. You're the slice of sanity when it comes to Conan books. Now, finally, this is my pick of the week. Star Wars The Age of Republic, Count Dooku, issue 1. I found this. I just wrote an elegant one and done, 8.5 out of 10. I would recommend anyone who's at all interested in the Star Wars to check this out. I thought this was such a really good depiction of Count Dooku. And, man, I wish the prequels had been more like this.
This was almost perfect Star Wars.
Yeah, wasn't it?
This is exactly what I want from a Star Wars comic.
I agree with you.
And they've got, like, the back page shows that there's another few coming out in the different titles.
We read the Jango Fett one, which we liked as well, remember?
Yeah, exactly. This is exactly what we wanted from Star Wars. Short one and done solo episodes.
Mm.
This one focused on Dooku going to a planet.
Not a guy that you would immediately think is warranting a one and done comic. But when you read it, you're like, actually, yeah, this was really good.
That was fantastic.
I will go so far as to say I've bought the two hardcovers of Darth Vader. If they collect all these Age of the Republics...
And I imagine they will.
I will probably pick up the hardcover. I really am keeping an eye on this kind of stuff now. I think it was an excellent, excellent issue.
We've done... So we had the Fett, we've had Dooku, Amidala and Grievous were the next two kind of characters.
Okay, I'm interested.
Grievous I actually think could do a really cool...
I'd love to know more about Grievous. Have you watched a lot of Clone Wars, which I believe Grievous is all over? I haven't.
Actually quite like the character's a pretty cool character.
Grievous got a kind of shit death scene. Was it in Attack of the Clones or something?
Yeah,
it was really poor.
But that's kind of bundled up in prequel disappointment.
Was that Revenge of the Sith or was that Attack of the Clones? It might have been Revenge of the Sith. I can't remember. But it was a shit scene, I thought.
It was.
Personally. Look, I gave this 8.5 out of 10. I could be argued to a 9. What did
I
you
gave it
from?
A 9. I actually really enjoyed this.
Now,
this was really well done. Especially for me, it was the other Jedi.
Yeah. The tiger
kind of
guy.
Shows up and there's literally a tiger, like,
I love it.
Tiger face on human body.
Yeah.
And I thought that was really cool. And he's, you know, fanboying over Dooku.
Are they in the prequels at any point? Any of the tiger kind of people? I've never seen them.
I don't remember seeing them.
Yeah. You know who should get one? Mace Windu.
I'm 100% sure they're going to bring that out if they
can. I wouldn't be surprised if Mace Windu got one. If we're doing Count Dooku, Anyway, now, Stu, trade of the week to wrap this show up. Now, look, this was an interesting one. Avengers by Kurt Busiek and George Perez was one of my picks. And I'll say it, Stu, straight up. 2019, I bit off more than I could chew with this one. This was a big read, 280 pages. I did get through it. Look, I want to say up front, for me, one of the weakest trades we've done in a while. My initial reaction was to call it aggressively mediocre. Then I was like, I recognized, I'm just going to give you my thoughts first off before you respond. I thought it was okay, but I found the art, good though it was, very cluttered. Like, the opening arc, I was really struggling, man. Like, slogging. As I got into it more, I realized it really is me. You know, one of those situations, like, it's me. This just isn't my cup of tea. This wasn't why I was an Avengers. This was why I wasn't an Avengers fan in, like, the 90s. Like, Avengers to me in the 90s, dude, I swear to God, I was almost, like, negative. You know, when you put two negative magnets together or whatever it is? Repellent. I just had no interest in the Avengers at all, really. Other than I liked Iron Man a bit. As this series wore on, I read almost 280 pages of it. I did enjoy it more as the team decluttered. And I found the art very good. I just found early on it was so cluttered. I really found it just cheesy. And I was really struggling, as I've rarely struggled. And it reminded me of Roger Stern's Avengers. I love Roger Stern, but I've said on the show before, I really didn't like his Avengers run. And this seemed very reminiscent of that, as it was every man and his dog in not a very interesting story, and just, it was too much information for Dave. I end up, my final score is a 6, but I could be argued with a 6.5, and I would recommend this to the hardcore Avengers fans. It's not bad. It gets better. That's where I was, Stu. I had a lot of... I really did... I took a fucking one for the Signal this week. I've been churning through this thing for days. It's been hard. So well, where are you?
I actually quite enjoyed the first story. I thought Morgan Le Fay coming in...
Okay.
...and doing almost like a battle world
take yeah.
on it, where all the heroes were transported to an alternate reality.
It wasn't the concept. It was the execution for me that killed it. I just hated the execution, man. I got to be honest, like... Every fucking Avenger ever in some, like, it just, it was really cheesy. I really actually was like, this is why I didn't read Avengers. I had that reaction, you know. I was like, man, like, I found this, like, it's quite a well-told comic in a lot of ways. Like, I think hardcore Avengers fans get a lot out of it. But this is one where I was like, this is me, you know? This is me, not liking this style of comic.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah. You know, like, that's valid, though.
It is, but like I was saying, I think the concept worked really well. I think they wrote the Kurt Busiek wrote the team really well. Like, he had a few stalwart, like, center players. Thor, Cap, and Iron Man kind of anchored this series.
I thought there was too little Iron really Man, well. Man. I thought Iron Man barely gets any speaking lines. Hawkeye gets more. Hawkeye was pretty good. And I thought Cap was pretty good. And Thor was good.
I mean, Hawkeye's always played as the outsider who wants to be inside and feels like he should be inside.
Yeah.
And that works well. It's always worked well. But this is...
Yeah.
Yes, they had a lot of characters in here. Most of them didn't get a lot of screen time at all. They were kind of...
Page presence, more likely, you know?
Yeah, I read it more as Kurt Busiek wanted to acknowledge that, yes, we had a massive lineup, but no, we didn't want to use them all going forward. We wanted to simplify it very quickly.
And that is the point of the story, isn't it?
Like, it's exactly the point of the story. Like, after the first three issues where this Morgan Le Fay story was over, they actually, like, had the sit-down, which is exactly what you described as your ideal Justice League movie... Which is them sitting around a table talking about membership rules.
Oh, dude, I'd love it in a fucking Justice League movie.
I'm like, yeah, I'm reading it going, this is exactly what
Yeah, you know what part of this is? This is one of these weird... Because I'm one of those people, I'm... In terms of, like, a UDC, Marvel, I really don't entertain the question much because I think it's silly, but I have to admit that when it comes to the Avengers deep roster, I really am more of a DC guy.
I think that's just... It tends to be more of what you've read more of.
Yeah.
Is more than anything else.
But I've read a lot of Avengers, man, like, by these days.
Yeah, but I think at this point you've read more DC.
Probably.
And you're just more comfortable with that kind of level of depth in DC.
Probably. You're probably right.
Whereas I'm probably the same in Marvel's sense. Yeah.
So,
like, I am more comfortable reading deep into Marvel than I am deep into DC at this point.
Okay, question though. Who, like, when you look at this run and you compare it to, like, say, Bendis' New Avengers, because I think Bendis' New Avengers is so much more my cup of tea. I read that. That was the book that got me into the Avengers. When Bendis came back, or came onto Avengers, and he did Avengers Disassembled, and then he was like, we're doing Avengers with Wolverine, Spider-Man, Cap, you know, et cetera, et cetera. I was like, my eyes lit up, and I was like, oh, wow, we're getting the cool characters on the team now? And I got into it, and I loved it. For more than just that, I loved the series. It was my first real experience of Avengers. Whereas this is the Kurt Busiek is much more honouring the past, and that's why I think hardcore Avengers fans will get a lot out of this series. And I want to say to these guys, it's probably an 8.5. Really. It really honours the past. Like, I don't want any listeners out there to think that this is anything more than just my very personal reaction and take. And I did find, funnily enough, because even as Stu was coming around today, I kept going, and I've almost read the complete 280 pages. By the end of it, Stu, guess what? I was starting to go, actually, this isn't so bad. I think picking it up more.
It's got a bit of a steep learning curve if you're not...
Yeah.
Into the Marvel deep rosters.
Yeah.
Because the first few issues do have a lot of characters that fly around, and you're kind of in an awkward phase for, like, Captain Marvel, who's in a bit of an awkward phase.
Interesting story to with Captain Marvel. She's going through alcoholism.
Yeah, but we've kind of seen her. This is just after she lost the binary powers.
Yeah, yeah.
So she's playing Warbird in this.
I actually found her one of the more interesting... She was actually got me a little bit more hooked into the story.
Yeah, so it's an interesting phase for her going through.
What did you think of Iron Man's
and
mask?
And Thor's lost all the Asgardians, and there's kind of a...
Yeah, there's a lot going on in Thor's world.
Yeah, turmoil there. And, like, there's some really cool moments here for characters that we know and love.
As well as
pairing it up with characters you don't know, which I've always found actually works better in Avengers comics.
Mm.
When you've got the whole team of A-listers,
sure,
I don't feel like you get anything from it.
Yeah, I hear you.
Because you go into it, you read the story, they're going to triumph.
Yeah.
You know the way the team's going to work. Unless you can throw in a death of a supporting character or something...
Mm.
You kind of... It's just treading water.
Well, this has got, like, Triumph and Firestar characters I know nothing about, and they're very much the rookies. You need the rookies, you know?
Yeah, but I've always felt like you need... exactly how they did... I think it's episode 4 of this, issue 4, where they say, out of the founders, I think we need at least 2 or 3 to stay.
Yeah.
And then we fill up the roster with some young kids, some new people.
Yeah.
Some less experienced ones. And I'm like, yeah, that's exactly
I don't know if you've read as deep as me, but Hawkeye leaves at about issue 10.
Yeah.
And he says, I've got to go and do my own thing for a while, maybe a long while. And he was having a lot of inner turmoil because he'd been a leader of West Coast Avengers or whatever, and he was more kind of a foot soldier in Cap's Avengers. I found some of that stuff interesting. To be honest...
And he's always been bitter that Cap is considered a founder.
Yeah.
Where he's not part of the founding members.
That's right.
Hulk's always considered not a founding Avenger.
And he was a founding member.
When he was. And there's kind of argument that if... You consider Cap, you should also consider Scarlet Witch and Quicksilver.
Yeah, because they're very much like the very second wave of Avengers that came in.
Issue 4. We're not talking a long way into it.
No.
Literally 3 issues where founders...
Scarlet Witch is interesting in this. Perez obviously had a good time drawing it. The art, actually, when we got away from the cluttered pages of everybody, I really started to appreciate the art more.
Yeah.
Funnily enough, I at first thought this is a 6 out of 10. I'm going to give it a 7... personally. But as I say, I think a hardcore Avengers fan, this is more like an 8.5, but you've got to dig in deep, you know? But I myself give it a 7. That's my official score. But I just want to, as always, Stu, I do like to point out to people that this is very much my take and my opinion. Like, I think different readers coming with more Avengers-centric tastes could probably get a lot more out of it.
Yeah, well, I mean, I'm giving it an 8.5. Like, that's...
There you go.
This was quite enjoyable.
Just a Marvel zombie over there,
Stu. Sowed the seeds for Disassembled.
Yes.
In that it kind of showed you that Wanda's powers were changing.
Yeah, this is all pre-House of M.
Control.
Yeah.
And that she can do amazing things like create this whole other reality.
She can recall Wonder Man back from the dead.
Yeah, exactly.
Like a genie almost.
Yeah, because it showed that the ability to, like, create life and destroy, like...
Yeah.
It planted the seeds for a lot of future events that were major events.
I'm going to say something that's almost a bombshell, considering how negative I was at the beginning of this. To be honest, having read almost to the end of the first collection, I actually feel like reading the second one. Yeah. Like, isn't that proof that Kurt Busiek has managed to just weave a bit of a spell? Because when I first started reading this, dude, I was reading this late night going, oh my God, what have I done? This is Avengers. This is Aliens versus Predator again. This is Cross of Earths again. And then
I never got that. I always thought, like, coming into it, new writer on this team.
Sure.
So the first thing he does is have him play with every character at his disposal.
Yeah.
And I thought a 3-issue run with Morgan Le Fay is a great way to do that.
Yeah.
Like, it's not a massive villain that we care about, so you can have fun.
Yeah.
You can go a little bit crazy with the concept.
One thing I do like about the Avengers, and funnily, it ties into what you're saying, I like that they hang around the mansion and chat and stuff. I actually like that.
Of course
that.
You do. I was really going, this is like 100% Finn's.
When they started doing that, I was like, oh, I like this. They kind of, do they talk about the Constitution, the regulations?
Yeah, that's like a waiting room with the heroes. They're like, call them in. And
that's actually where I'm a bit more like, oh, I like they're doing this kind of procedural stuff. Like, yeah, that was where I was like, it suddenly became, oh, this is slightly more my cup of tea.
Yeah, so it was, Busick started out with, have fun with everyone for 3 issues.
Yeah.
3 issues only. It's a nice transitional phase.
Sure.
And then issues 4 and somewhat into 5.
Yeah.
It was, let's refine the team to what I'm going to use going forward.
Mm.
Set a couple of like little ground rules for my run.
Yeah.
And from that point on, he managed to start putting together some momentum, had some characters going, had some really cool arcs.
I remember Kurt Busiek.
It's almost the perfect storm for an Avengers title.
Meh. It just was a bit of a hard curve coming in.
It's slow payoff, though.
Yeah. I want to give you a memory of my past, Jude. This is funny. About 97, I'm in getting my license registered or something, and I'm sitting in the room, and at the time, I was almost 100% out of comics, okay? Like, I wasn't actually buying any weekly comics at all, and I had a few DC trades, and the guy next to me, I remember, as an Asian couple, the guy had an Avengers title open. And I remember I did the old look over the shoulder. And I was like, well, imagine knowing what that's all about. And I was like, well, I wonder what's going on in there. And I remember looking, and there was like an electric base kind of like Avengers issue. And I was like, man, I wonder what's going on over there in Marvel. I'm so far out of the loop. You know, it'd literally been 5 years since I'd read any Marvel. And I was just like, man, I wonder what's going on. I wonder if it was around this time period, because it was the late 90s that Busiek was writing this title, like leading in. He famously was selling quite well, and he was very anti the Ultimate Universe. Mm-hmm. When they did Ultimate Universe, he was like, no one's going to pick up. He was actually right. No one's going to pick up normal Avengers if you're marking this as the cool Avengers, which is how they marketed Mark Miller's Ultimates.
Yeah.
That marketing campaign worked. I was totally into the Ultimate Avengers, and then Bendis came on to New Avengers, and I got roped into that. So marketing-wise worked, whereas this is very much, I reckon this is very much your Drew Gerasi. I bet Drew Gerasi loves this run, you know? Because it's a very classic Avengers feel.
Yeah, it's really well done. Like, yeah, there's, yeah. It's slow to start, which I think is a fair criticism that you had.
Sure.
I think you're right. I think having every character under the sun is overwhelming unless you're heavily into that world.
Sure.
There are a couple of characters there, and I'm like, man, I've read them maybe one issue before. Like,
sure. And you've read a lot of the early days of Marvel. Up
this roster.
Yeah.
And I think people like Machine Man. I'm like, who the fuck cares about Machine Man?
Yeah, I know who he is. That's exactly. It, you know?
Yeah.
Even like, he was like, I mostly do my own thing. I was like, yeah.
Yeah.
We got that Machine Man.
And then when Spidey kind of tags out very early, you're like, oh, well, there goes.
Because that was disappointing for me. I was like, oh, Spidey. And I was like, yeah, just here to say hi. Yeah.
Or even worse, where the Reed Richards just like telecommutes in and he's like, yeah we're not gonna be coming.
Yeah, we're not part of this show.
Yeah. But it's passed from us. Thanks for the call. And the Hulk has like a 1 second.
Yeah, don't dare call me again.
Don't call me again, or I'll come after you.
I want to say this while we're on the topic of Kurt Busiek. Stu, I know that you've got an interest in the Thunderbolts run at some point doing that.
Absolutely, yeah.
Yeah, and so do I. And Jimmy King's Comics has told me Astro City is one of the most amazing comic book reads you'll ever read. It's Kurt Busiek. He did that after he got off the Avengers title. And it's his creator-owned title. And apparently everyone says it's amazing. And I think we'll definitely start off with doing a trade of that at some point this year.
Yeah, for sure. He's a talented writer.
And to be honest, I want to say this. It got 7, but at the end of this trade, I'd flip from this is the biggest slog of all time to Davey thinks he might check out Volume 2.
Because, so, you were telling me early in the week, you were like a few issues in and you're like hating it.
Just slogging, absolutely grinding my way through it, to be honest, man.
When I'd caught up, because I started later than you, I caught up 3 or 4 issues in, and I'm like,
yeah,
I don't really see the problem.
But I did say to you, I thought that you'd like it more than me.
Oh, yeah. I think that was always going to be the case. Mm.
Well, it was a brave pick from me, Stu. So how does that work on the scoreboards that you keep? What do you give? I gave it a 7.
I gave it 8.5.
Okay, fair enough.
So it's actually clocking in right around the middle, 7 and 7.
I think that's a pretty fair. Yeah,
7.75 is...
Yeah, but as always, I always try to say, if you heavily like the Avengers, check this run out. I think it's probably an essential run. Now, Stu, what are our plans for next week?
So next week, one of my picks again, Black Widow, Shield's Most Wanted.
Okay.
We're going to do a little 5-issue run...
Mark Waid, yeah?
Yeah, Mark Waid, Chris Samnee.
Fantastic. Beautiful artist. Beautiful. Just a beautiful artist.
Yeah, no, this was one of the things I picked up.
I've actually read this in singles
this week
when it came out.
I'm happy to read.
A couple of years, only a couple of years old.
Looking forward to reading this one.
Okay, and remind listeners that episode 104, we're going to do Batman Nightfall Volume 3.
Yes.
Is that right?
Night's End.
Night's End, yeah. So the last omnibus, the big boy, so get reading now.
That's what we're doing as well.
Yeah.
We're starting early, reading the background.
Yeah.
Because that's our big 2-year anniversary show. It's our birthday show.
Chippers creepers. Isn't it good news that I recovered from last week? Remember where I said I wanted to vanish into nothingness? Now I'm happy. I've been in a good mood all show, Stuart.
Yeah, there you go. I want to know your supplier, because you're clearly on something. I
know what it is, a lot of drugs, Stuart.
Yeah, Dave's a pretty happy place.
Painkillers. Right? The feet up on the throne. Do you like the new setup, Stu? How is the new chair? Stu's in a new chair. I got you a new chair, brought it in for Stu. Was it good?
It's fine. It's a chair.
It's quite comfy, though. It's the new chairs we bought for the dining
chair
room.
Things.
I'm loving the throne. I'm one step away from next week wearing the Jughead crown. Like, seriously, I am. I'm wearing the Batman cap now, but I could wear a Jughead crown easily on the show.
Yeah, you could.
Eat a burger as well, Jughead. It's solid, even though I'm on a diet now, by the way, listeners, so I can't even eat burgers. So I'm
I know. You've been a pleasure to work with during the day. Everyone.
As my body craves for sustenance.
The amount of whinging you can put through in a day.
It's, you know, it's a feat. Work, it's almost a superpower.
Almost.
All right. Well, on that note, good night, kids. We'll catch you next week. Bye.
See ya.